Views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
Stand up, all fat men, stand up straight. Stand up because no chair can hold your weight.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Well, you know, I took this test, and it sort of turns out that I'm technically mentally retarded.
I can't hear you. You'll have to speak into the microphone.
Paul Perillo.
No, 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 don't do that. Don't try to turn my words on me. You know, you can just go to hell. We're like, yeah, yeah, like that. Yeah, yeah.
You can't hit me. I'm a girl.
And Andy. And Andy?
I don't care. I don't give it. I'm all worked up right now, so we have to do it. Just do it, okay?
Andy Hart.
Let's corner the nerds and call them gay and make them show us their penises.
Won't that be gay of them?
Eric Scalavino.
That's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. You're a moron. A pretentious moron. And you know what? Take that sweater off. Makes you look queer.
For now, anyway.
You think I cared about you? No. You're just smart enough, and you're just clever enough to occasionally amuse me.
PFW in Progress.
Tell me what it was like being one of them.
It was like basking in the warm glow of a higher intelligence as it envelops you and allows you to become part of its everlasting glory.
Part of the Patriots Football Network.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. It's Tuesday here at Gillette Stadium. It feels like I haven't been on air for a long time. It's been a week, actually, because we had the game on Thursday and Paul and Andy were on air. They had the pregame social, which I think was a huge success. And Adam Jones from ESPN Boston had his postgame show. And actually, this is the first time we've had a chance to talk about the preseason game on Thursday and all that happened there. And I think for a preseason game, there was as much to talk about as any preseason game we've had in a while in terms of, you know, young players flashing. So we'll get into all of that. We'll get into the week coming up. Patriots are traveling to Tampa Bay tomorrow to take on the Buccaneers Thursday night. That should be interesting. So let's get going, huh? Webradio at patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. And Paul?
Yes.
How's it going?
It's going very well, Freddie.
Early practice today. Instead of 1:30 as they have been doing, they went out at 10:30. So you and I just came back from the practice field. Andy and Eric will join us after player availability, probably the last half hour of the show or so.
Yeah, we caught a little more than half of the practice today. Should stress that it was not a full pads workout in shells today.
Right.
So a lot less going on. They have been in full pads the last 3 days, and then prior to the game they were in full pads. So maybe a little bit of an ease back on the throttle by Belichick.
Yep.
I thought it was interesting in talking, and we're going to get to Jacksonville in a second, but in listening to Bill talk about Tampa starting on Saturday, how big he has deemed this week. He keeps calling it a big week. Talks very glowingly about Tampa Bay, 10-win team last year. He's mentioned that several times. Part of my preview, I mentioned that the Bucs are loaded with young players. 74 of their 90 current players on the roster are 25 or under. A fact that both Nick Caserio and Belichick have also alluded to since, which obviously they read our previews, Freddie.
Right.
He thinks this is a good test. He's using it as sort of a game-type week in the preparation, using Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, kind of the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday as normal, you know, lead-up that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So, and he talked about it going very well. The practices have had a good, sharp tempo to them. Yesterday, very physical inside the field house, probably another reason why they weren't in pads today. So I thought that was kind of interesting, how he's treating this second preseason game. I would expect to see the summer debuts of a lot of people that didn't play last Thursday.
You think so? Because,
yeah.
Not
all of them.
All right, people who are on the sideline and dressed right.
Yeah,
right.
Not all of them, but yeah. I would expect to see Tom Brady a little
right.
bit. I would expect
Cinco.
To see Logan Mankins.
Right.
I would expect to see Ocho,
yep.
Gronkowski,
yep.
Gerard Mayo, Vince yep. Wilfork. I'd expect to see some of all, you know, a lot of those guys that did not play on last Thursday.
Right. So that's coming up, and of course we'll talk about it. But going back in time, last week to the Jacksonville Jaguars. We started off with the pregame social, Paul, and I thought that was awesome.
Well, Andy and I had a lot of fun.
Yep.
And it was a little bit hectic. We hadn't done it before, so that's why we specifically wanted to start doing it in the preseason to sort of work some kinks out.
Right.
And I know that on the technical side, there were some kinks. Hopefully, people have kind of worked through those, and we have our technology is a little bit easier to navigate. But I was thrilled, and I know Andy was too. With the level of participation, you guys really stepped up. Keep it going. Like we said, we want to keep stressing. This is how we want you to prepare for every Patriots game.
Right.
Start off with 2 hours with Andy and Paul, and let's find out how exactly you're going about getting ready to watch the Patriots each and every week.
A couple of the technical things that I saw coming through. First of all, yes, you do have to listen to it from the Facebook page, unless you're listening to it from your smartphone. But online, yes, it is on the Facebook page. The second thing is people mention, and I agree with the comment, that you couldn't see new comments without refreshing your page. And if you did that, you'd lose your stream for the broadcast. So Chris Ferreira has figured out a way to make it so that that comment section is scrolling. So as new comments come in, you'll see them and you won't have to refresh the page. So that's I think a big improvement for the second week of the pregame social. So we're looking forward to that. Eric and I will be on the road. We'll be calling in. And Paul, I don't know how you're going to equal the radio gold that was Vito Stellino.
It was a perfect guest.
Because everybody's been emailing how great that was.
Only Andy and I could get into an argument with an out-of-town writer in a five-minute phone
hit. Well, that's kind of what I was hoping. Brent in Illinois actually has an Amber Alert. he says, I thought I'd pass this along. There's an Amber Alert in Jacksonville for the Jaguars. They have not been seen in 6 days. They were last seen boarding a bus to travel to New England, but they never made it there last Thursday. According to Vito Stellino, a prime suspect is Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots. He has been known to pull shenanigans in the past, so people are wondering if Bill Belichick has done something with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And one other thing about Vito Stellino, sources cited an unnamed NFL executive familiar with the Patriots is saying he believes Vito Stellino, a beat writer for the Jaguars, is still lost somewhere around Gillette Stadium looking for his car. In a recent tweet posted by Stellino, Stellino said, the upside about a parking lot is that it's a good place to stop your car. The downside is it gives Belichick a chance to steal your car. There have been some eyewitness reports of seeing a grumpy old bent-over douche nozzle slithering around Lot 51 mumbling about finding the precious and yelling about Trixie Belichick's. No official search is yet underway. But people were... It's funny because while you were doing that interview, Eric and I were sitting right above him. And I could tell, they must be going at it here a little bit.
Well, he started off basically by saying that everybody hates Belichick around the league. And didn't, he asked us if we were aware of that. Then he kind of worked into...
Am I really into solving the world's problems?
The fact that the Patriots' success has really nothing to do with Belichick. It's all Brady. And we'll see how great he is when he loses Brady. And then, we brought up the fact that they went 11-5 with Castle just as an indication that maybe he wouldn't be, a three-time Super Bowl winning coach without Tom Brady, but he probably would have found a way to win some games.
Right.
I wasn't hearing any of that. Then we asked him some questions about Jacksonville and what guys might be playing, and he sort of yelled at us. I mentioned Mercedes Lewis. He just signed a contract last week. Said, I didn't know signing a contract, precluded you from playing. I didn't know that. Those two were mutually exclusive.
Oh, boy.
I thought if you didn't sign a contract, then you wouldn't be playing.
The Blaine Gabbert was pretty good, too. Well, he's a rookie, and he's only been here 2 weeks.
Yeah. I asked how Blaine Gabbert has looked, and that was the answer, exactly what Kevin just said. Jeez. With the same tone.
Wow.
And then Andy followed up. We kind of wrapped it up with Jack Del Rio, been in the league 9 years. Doesn't really seem to have accomplished a whole lot. Well, he'll be fired on January 2nd. That's what he said. The last game will be January 2nd. We'll be fired on January 2nd.
Somebody asked if you were actually interviewing Joe Paterno, which I thought was a great line.
That was gold.
Yeah. All right. So then we move on.
Hopefully
we'll
be a little bit better this week. We have Roy Cummings from the Tampa Tribune to talk about the Tampa Bay Bucks. Hopefully that'll go a little bit better.
Okay. On to the game, 47-12. According to Michael King, sports author,
Yeah, this has not been confirmed, by the way, by Elias.
Right. They don't keep track of preseason games, but they're not denying it for regular season. This is the only time that this an NFL game has ended with the score 47-12. So that's a little bit of a nugget. Now
this was an NFL game, huh?
Yeah. And there are 15 other scores.
I just had a little bubble there.
Yeah. 15 other scores that have never ended as such. But anyway.
2-0?
Yeah, 2-0 would be one.
Has an NFL game ever ended 2-0?
I wonder. Safety.
3-2.
So
it's got to be more than how many?
15.
Oh, I suppose that's a lot.
So 47-12, the most the Patriots have ever scored in a preseason. Is that correct?
I believe that is accurate.
Yeah. And to what do we attribute this, Paul? Why the offensive output that we saw when practice has not looked that sharp.
No, offensively practices haven't been the offense hasn't been that sharp. But you opened the show by saying that some young guys flashed. I think that's true. Obviously, I'm not even going to get into Taylor Price because we talked so much about him leading into the game.
Plus, we put the curse on him. We put him on the cover of PFW. Yeah. Hasn't been in the practice since.
We were so excited about how well he had been playing in camp, and then he came through and played exceptionally well in the game. Unfortunately, it looks like he got dinged up a little bit. He hasn't been to practice since. But Stephen Ridley also looked very good. And the two quarterbacks, I thought, performed well. Brian Hoyer and even Ryan Mallett, who I didn't think has had really what I would call one single solid practice. Now, I'm sure he's improving. I'm sure he's doing a lot of little things better than he was at the start of camp that maybe laymen like us aren't really picking up on. But I haven't seen him consistently throw the ball well and make good decisions and get the ball out on time on the practice field as I did in the second half Thursday. I thought he looked terrific. I thought he played really, really well, and that was very encouraging.
But is it just because
offensively, I think they just clicked. They had one of those days.
Is it also just because the Jags aren't that good?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, the Patriots are a better team than Jacksonville at full strength. Neither side played very many starters. I know a lot was made that, Jacksonville, the Patriots were moving the ball against Jacksonville starters. They didn't play really any more starters than the Patriots
right.
did.
On defense, there were quite a few starters out there for the Patriots.
Yeah, there was a handful on both sides, and Jacksonville too. But, right. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like, well, you know, Brian Hoyer in the second group beat up on, you know, on Jacksonville. Sorry, I mean, the Patriots had a handful of guys. You know, Danny Woodhead and Aaron Hernandez,
right.
for example, started the game. Those are guys, they might not technically be starters.
They have a lot of
experience. But they are frontline offensive players that are going to be playing extensively this season.
Right.
You know, Jacksonville had some guys on deep. Rasheen Mathis was out there. I saw Derek Smith out there. I saw Paul Posluszczyk. They had some guys on the field that are going to be part of their real defense this year. And that was encouraging. I don't want to mislead that it was all the starters for Jacksonville and all the backups for the Patriots. It was kind of a mixed bag there on both sides, but a very encouraging performance. Bill doesn't necessarily care specifically about the win and the loss. It's how you play to get there. They played pretty well in this. They had some sloppy moments, but I think that some of that was, and I know that I've been sort of arguing against the whole lockout-related thing, but I do think you're going to get sloppy football.
Three fumbles, one of them lost.
They fumbled on the first two plays of the game.
Right.
They had chances for interceptions that they dropped. They had chances where they could have been picked off, but for penalties on the other team, taking those back. So they had a really bad snap on an extra point that was Keystone Cops-like. So they had some sloppy play that was kind of overshadowed by, you know, three touchdowns by Ridley and Price looking good and, 47 points and all of this stuff. They allowed an 84-yard kickoff return, So they had some moments of sloppiness that Bill wasn't happy with. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good effort to start out.
It sure was. And this week, like you mentioned, we'll probably see more of the frontline guys for the Patriots. They're going to have to get in there eventually.
I would think.
Yeah.
I would think that you're going to see Brady at the start anyway. Interesting, Matt Light has returned to practice. He was removed from PUP. He came back on Saturday, I believe. And he didn't really do much in that practice, didn't do any real physical work at all, not one-on-one drills, not teamwork. On Sunday, he started to do some one-on-one stuff. On Monday, he stepped into some more team reps. and he actually was with the second group for the most part, but even filled in for Nate Solder with that group that we always like to call, you know, the group that's with Logan Mankins and Dan Copen and Dan Conley and Sebastian Vollmer. So he is slowly working his way back physically. On Saturday, he talked about he's not ready physically for to go full tilt yet. So I still think that he might be a question mark for Thursday. But based on what I've seen, what I saw yesterday, I think there's a chance. Now, I didn't think there was any chance he would play Thursday. But now that he's getting reps with, you know, full 11 on 11 work, maybe he will make his debut. But that's going to be interesting to watch that group get out there for the first time.
You won't see Haynesworth. He hasn't been at practice. You won't see Sean Ellis. He's still...
Yeah, in terms of the guys that have been missing, no real changes there. Today, 21 players not practicing. Same 21 as yesterday. That means second day in a row for Jermaine Cunningham. Brandon Spikes has been out for the better part of 2 weeks now. He hasn't been out there. Haynesworth, as you mentioned, Freddie. Sean Ellis still on PUP. Looks like Kevin Falk and James Sanders, two guys who haven't really done much. Sanders practiced very little. Falk is still on PUP. They both brought their helmets out today. So I would guess that that's an indication that they're a little bit closer to returning, but still haven't seen them. Mike Wright, another guy who's been working out in shorts, but haven't seen him on the field in quite a while. So there are a handful of what I would deem to be relevant players that have not really practiced in a long time.
Okay, webradio at patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. By the way, we're coming to you from the Subway Fresh Broadcast Studios. I have to mention that.
I know. I didn't mention it at all during the...
Yeah.
What's the name of our show? Pregame Social.
Yeah. I should mention that at the top of the show. But
live!
The Subway Fresh
from our Subway Fresh Broadcast Studio.
And the Ace Ticket Hotline. So... taking your calls and emails. We probably should just reminder that for anyone that just tuned in, practice today started at 10:30. So Paul and I came to start the show. Andy and Eric will be here probably about the last half hour of the show to fill us in with who they talk to after practice. But it is a shells walk, you know, practice today. It's not a full pad practice. So, you know, it's a little bit slower tempo than we saw even yesterday in the bubble. They went inside yesterday because of the rain.
Nothing slow about the tempo in the bubble yesterday, that's for sure. That was a lot, especially the last hour or so.
They
really got physical.
After I left, I heard a lot of screaming going on in the bubble.
They had some real physical play. Chung absolutely buried Aaron Hernandez right as he caught a pass.
I saw that.
A little bit earlier than that, Ninkovich nailed Danny Woodhead on a short run. Same kind of hit with a shoulder. Not necessarily trying to tackle him, but ended up knocking him off his feet.
Right.
Both occasions. Then at the end of the practice, when it looked like it was over, they finished up with some field goal work, which is generally the sign that practice has done. But rather than doing the conditioning running, Bill had them line up on the goal line. And first offense, first defense went at it, and they were popping.
Really?
Oh, it was
so that's
what physical.
That's what I heard.
It was
the
as physical as I've seen, and the defense won. They had two plays. Defense stuffed them on both of them. Then the second unit came in. Defense forced an incomplete pass on that, and then they did some opportunity stuff real quick, and then they ended up wrapping up practice with some conditioning runs. So probably went about 15 minutes longer than they anticipated, and it was physical.
Well, that's good. That's maybe why they
gave them a little bit of
shells today, maybe, because it was so physical yesterday. Lyndon from Colton, California writes in, how do you guys feel about the new rule requiring that all scoring plays be reviewed? If there is a play that always requires a replay, to me, it makes more sense to have all plays that result in a turnover be reviewed instead. So he's got another part about TJ Houshmandzadeh. But first of all, the new rule. I've seen so much misinformation about this rule. Okay? First of all,
they're not all replayed. All reviewed.
A guy upstairs is looking at the play. And if he thinks that it's a play that should be a scoring play that should be reviewed, then they review it. Otherwise, it's just they go with the call on the field. Now, I think around here, everybody is reacting about this because the first two plays happened to be reviewable touchdown.
They were both questionable.
They were both questionable. And I actually like this rule.
I love it.
I think it allows the coach from not having to waste a flag, you know, on a scoring play, which is so critical.
I even take it a step further, because I like the way the college game is, that every play is under review and you don't have to waste a challenge.
Right.
There is no, I think every play should be reviewed.
I think eventually we're going to get there, Paul.
I think you have the technology
right.
to have every play reviewed. It doesn't mean that every play is going to stop
right.
and have the referee have to look at it and waste time. As you said, Fred, accurately, the first two touchdowns were borderline. They were both very close.
Yep.
One was the Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, the Stephen Ridley, it's like I just right. need to change those. Stephen Ridley's first touchdown run, which it was highly in question
very
whether
close.
Or not the ball broke the plane.
And then Price.
And then Taylor Price's terrific catch in the back of the end zone where, again, highly questionable whether or not he had secured the ball. You and Andy actually thought it was going to get overturned.
Right. If I'm Jack Del Rio, I probably want to review both of those plays, but being early in the game, maybe I'm thinking to myself, do I waste a flag?
I just don't think it should have to come in. It shouldn't be a strategy as to whether or
right.
not it's too early.
Right. And you know,
that should never come into it.
I heard Felger yesterday on the radio saying, you know, that's why you pay these coaches big bucks.
I pay my big coaches big bucks to identify who can play and who can't and to set up schemes and put my personnel in situations where they
right.
can beat the other team's personnel. That's what I pay my coach big bucks
right.
for.
I don't
play to decide when he's going to throw a red
right.
flag on
them. And I certainly don't pay them to be refs. You know?
Exactly.
They shouldn't have to worry about...
I'm on the sideline 50 yards away from something, and I have to identify whether or not that was a touchdown?
Right.
That's part of my right. job. That's why I make $5 million a year.
Right. So we'll see. You know, people are worried it's going to slow down the game. I'm good with this right now. I want to see... I think if at the end they get it right, that's all I care about.
This to me comes down to whether or not you're a proponent of replay. And if you're not a proponent of replay, I certainly understand. If you just don't like replay and you don't like the game ever to get stopped for a review, I don't think you're wrong. I disagree with you. I don't think you're wrong.
Right.
I think, like you just said it perfectly, I would rather have it be right.
Yeah.
And I think that's the goal for all of these plays. Some people just don't really like the stop. They don't like the intrusion in the game. They don't like taking the human element out of it. Again, I don't think they're wrong. I disagree, but I don't think they're wrong. That's your opinion. But if you like replay and you like the way it's used, I don't see why you wouldn't want it to be done more extensively. Yeah. I don't think it's an intrusion. First of all, I say this to you every year. For some reason, the NFL is hell-bent on making sure that game fits in that three-hour window. And I don't see the hue and cry. Why are these games so long? Like
right.
like you do in baseball, for
right.
example. Baseball, that's a real problem. Baseball purists like myself are getting turned off by baseball because the games take too long. That's not the problem in football.
No.
So if it's 3 hours or 3 hours and 10 minutes, I don't think people are going to worry. You're not all of a sudden going to get 4 hour games.
No.
It's not going to be like baseball where you're going from 2.5 to 3.5 hours on average. It's not going to happen like that. So,
yeah.
To me, with the way you put it, Fred, is exactly right. Make sure you get the call correct.
Right.
Now, Jack Del Rio probably wouldn't have challenged that first one. It was a first and goal play from inside the one. They were going to score.
Right.
So he probably would have let that one go. He absolutely would have challenged the second one.
Oh, yeah.
In a regular season game, I'm talking.
Yeah.
Maybe he wouldn't have wasted it in the preseason.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I believe that was a third and goal play, the second one.
And not only that, even though they upheld the call on the field that being a touchdown, I got to say that another official might have interpreted that differently. It was that close whether or not the ball was still moving, you know, when his feet hit the ground.
And I'll tell you something else.
It was very, very close.
You probably, in a regular season game, would have had more camera angles.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I totally agree with you. I think those were worthy of looking at, and I don't have a problem with the rule. Not every touchdown this season, guys, just remember, not every touchdown is going to stop the extra point from happening and have the referee go over and look.
Right.
There's going to be a very small percentage of touchdowns. The only part of the rule I don't like is it rewards the defense. The defense can save the challenge. Now, let's just say the same two plays happened. Same two plays.
Right.
And they were deemed down inside the one by contact, no touchdown, incomplete pass in the back of the end zone.
Right.
To me, that should automatically be reviewed. It's a potential
right.
scoring
right.
play.
Right. Right.
If you're going to have this rule, those two plays should have been reviewed,
yep.
even if they were deemed down, right. second down, or incomplete, fourth down right. on the price right. play.
Because to be clear, a non-scoring play
does not have the automatically review.
Right.
So I think that's unfair because now the offense is forced to waste a flag, waste a challenge, and you only get two.
Right.
Even if you're right now, you only get two.
So, I like the rule. I'm glad they did it. I think, like you said, they've got the technology. You know, let's use it. Let's get it right. And, you know, another thing Felger said, and the other thing he doesn't like is they only have one replay booth. And if the guy's at one end of the field, I think they have two, and I think they position them diagonally across from each other. But I will say this. One thing I would like is that the ref on the field listen to the guy in the booth a little bit. So if the guy in the booth is saying, look, Ed, it's not a touchdown, you know, that he doesn't have to then go through, you know, five times looking at the replay, look at it a couple times, and then come out. Use the whole time.
That's a way of tweaking the whole process that I completely agree with you. This is odd that you and I, especially when we're by ourselves, would be in accordance. I think when they initially put replay in, and remember it used to be there was a guy in the booth that handled it, and the word was they were reluctant to overturn the calls made by their boys on the field.
Right.
Remember?
Yep.
So they wanted to have the referee go over and look at it and make his own determination. I think that was a step in the wrong direction.
Yep.
I don't think you need to do that.
Right.
I think you could save time and be every bit as effective if there is a specific guy on the crew.
Yep.
In other words, it's the same thing if Ed Hockley looks underneath there as it is if the back judge calls pass interference. There's a guy, an eighth guy up in the booth who's replay review.
Yep.
It's his job to look at the replay and determine whether or not the play was called correctly.
Yep.
He's part of the crew.
Yep.
Should be no reluctance
right.
of any kind whether or not to back or whatever the call. And I think that's an easy fix, and I agree with you. It would make it a little bit quicker. It would move the process along.
Yeah, because, you know, I listened to...
Felger's whole thing, he hates Ed Hockley, which, by the way, he's right,
because
he talks incessantly.
Right.
But that's a problem with Ed Hockley, not a problem with the rules.
And, you know, I listened, they replayed some of Gil Santos's call, and, you know, the second, we're going to have to do this every time there's a touchdown. No, you're not going to have to do it every time there's a touchdown.
I'm going to guess that you're going to have to do that less than 10% of the time during the course of the season.
Right.
Out of all the touchdowns that are scored this season, I'm going to guess the extra point will not just be kicked as scheduled less than 10% of the time.
WebRadio@Patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's go to the phones. Anthony in Naples. Hey, Anthony, how you doing?
What's going on, fellas?
Oh, we're just living the Patriots life here.
Angry Anthony.
Yeah, no, I'm not angry. I feel like I have opinions, and maybe they come off as angry. I don't know. But
you don't have to defend yourself. I like it.
I can't help it. I'm fiery. I'm Portuguese. Can't help it. You know, the Italians, they know a little bit about that too, right?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I'm not known as zero to hot for nothing.
Yeah. You guys actually just went over it, I guess, as I called in. I was just going to make the point, like you guys are saying, Felger just hates Ed Hockley. You know, so I think that's pretty much what he was harping on. And I think it was just a poor example probably this week. You know, you're starting off the preseason, it was a big scoring game, and a lot of those scores were close. So I think this was probably the worst you could see it. You know, and plus, because it was Ed Hockley. I feel bad for the guy. He has good intentions, but my God, can he talk?
Oh, yeah. And then,
you know,
and he's not succinct. You know, I don't mind the explanation because so often we're left wondering, well, why did they pick up the flag? But he just doesn't seem to be able to be succinct in his explanation.
Well, the defender was just overpowered.
Right. Well, that was a good one. I like that one.
Yeah, no, that one was brilliant. That's why I'm not going to like that one. I loved.
Yeah.
But
hey, speaking of Felger, Anthony, I think I heard you call into his show recently. Did I not?
You probably did, calling him out on the Haynesworth thing. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember. I just remember feeling a little violated, like you cheated on us.
No, not at all. They're the girlfriend. You're the wife.
I don't mind.
Oh, that's nice to know. So you didn't cheat on
us. Yeah, I want our callers.
No, I'm just kidding.
I want our callers who are more informed than most sports talk people to call into these shows and keep these guys on the straight and narrow. Because too often, like yesterday, I was telling Paul, Felger was just going off with this bad information, and no one was holding him accountable. You know?
Well, Fred, I don't know if you heard me. That's actually why I called him, because he was freaking pissing me off.
Yeah, I must have missed it. Yeah.
Yeah, because the whole thing about the Haynesworth, and I noticed he changed his tone when I called him out. I'm not to toot my own horn or anything, but I called him out. I'm like, Felger, you keep saying that he's out of shape when, in actuality, like you guys had reported, you know, he got rolled up on with his knee, and he hasn't been back out in practice ever since. And I told him, stop misinforming people. You know what I mean? Say opinion, not fact. And
right.
I called him out on that.
Well, I might have to agree with Felger there. I think Haynesworth is part of what he's doing right now is getting in shape. But I hear what you're saying.
Like that, you know?
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. What else you got for us?
Well, you know what? After seeing the preseason, I really wanted to talk about defense a little bit. I was kind of poo-pooing the whole thing about going to a 4-3, but it seems like it's going that route. And I almost feel like it's almost like a year or 2 years too late, but finally he's doing it, that stubborn guy, Belichick. You know, because in my opinion, I felt like it seems like the league has been going towards a 3-4, so why don't you capitalize on everybody else going towards a 3-4 and getting that player that you always wanted and go for the guys that are a little bit more accessible?
I was thinking about that exact thing the other day, and here's what I think he might be thinking. You know, he hates giving up the big play, and I think finally he might have enough confidence in, you know, his defensive secondary where, okay, I'm going to allow these guys to play a little different technique up front because I think
because I think
I might be able to back them up behind them. I don't know that, and he's obviously never said that, but I think he might finally have the confidence in those guys in the secondary where he's willing to take more risks up front.
Yeah, I hope you're right, Fred. Hopefully that's it. I sit here now, like I said, I feel like this is almost a year or two. Because I just feel like as a defensive guy, I think Belichick, you know, if you told him, hey, run a 2-5, he'd be able to make up a scheme to try to stop the players, like, or the other team. I think it's a little bit overrated as in personnel. I think you can, if you're a great defensive mind, you can work with what you got. You know, that's just how I feel. And especially when you see a guy like Ron Rivera, you know, who goes from the cover two in Chicago and then goes over to San Diego and he runs a 3-4. And I don't know, what is he playing over there in Carolina? Have they declared? Are they a 3 or a 4?
I would assume there would be a 4-3, but I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, again, and look, we don't know what these coaches are actually teaching these guys. You know, Belichick says, and, you know, you can take him for what his word or not, but don't overthink this whole thing about 3-4-4-3. I played a 4-3 in Cleveland. I played it earlier as a Patriot coach, you know, 2001. They did a lot of 4-3. They have done it in other situations. Don't overthink it as you know, him being so strict to a 3-4 philosophy. So maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't be so obsessed with are they in a 3-4 or 4-3.
Yeah, and I agree.
Yeah. It comes down to the draft. Why are they picking players that they pick? I think that's why we wonder so much is why are they not going after certain guys? And I think that's where it comes in is who the guys they pick are.
Well, to me, it's the philosophy that's not changing. And according to Bill himself, it's not so much 4-3, 3-4. That I'm wholeheartedly with him. Because I've seen them use a 4-3 in the past occasionally, but it looks the same as the 3-4. It's just a matter of how many guys are down and whatnot. What I've seen so far this summer has not looked like that. It's been different, and Bill has been reluctant to either admit it or, I don't know, maybe he knows that we don't really know what we're what we're seeing. He knows that we don't know enough to specifically say what's happening, and maybe he just doesn't want to admit it and embrace it.
Yeah.
But it looks different to me.
Yeah. He's not going to come out and say,
we're one gapping now. It's a 4-3, and we're coming after you now.
Yeah. He's not going to say, you know, on first and second down, I'm telling Kyle Love to do X. Why would he? You know, why would he do that? Why would he make it easy? Because even scouts don't know what Kyle Love is being told to do. They know what he's doing, but they don't know if it's the right thing. So as, you know, even that little bit of ambiguity is something that coaches you know, they like to keep it that way.
Yeah, what do you think of Ridley? Should we get excited or just hold our horses?
Hold your horses. He looks okay. Yeah. He looks okay, and, you know, I'm not – but if he's going to – he's not going to be, I don't think, Curtis Martin in his first year.
I'm excited. I'm excited about him, but I was excited when they drafted him. I loved him in the pre-draft process. He was one of the guys that really stood out to me in that running back core. I wanted to draft him. I was excited when they did. I was excited after I talked to his college coach, who told me all the different things and how versatile he was. And now I've seen him on the practice field, and it hasn't always been great on the practice field. He's had some peaks and valleys, but what I do like is that he was out there. I think he was one of the first, if not the first, draft picks to sign. He was out there very quickly, and he hasn't missed any time. Yesterday he got a little banged up. It looked like he tweaked maybe a groin muscle, got some extra stretching, right back out there today. I like that. He hasn't missed any time. Fred's right. He's not going to rush for 1,500 yards like Curtis Martin did when he was a rookie. He's not going to get those opportunities, but I do think he's going to get a chance to be a part of that committee backfield, and I think he's going to be a big part of it. I think he's a good player, and he's showing that he can come out of the backfield and catch the ball. He's not just an in-between-the-tackles short yardage guy. He's more than that.
And I like, you know, the fact, Paul, when you talk to his coach during the draft, what that coach said is true. We found that to be true. He's not that fullback hybrid guy that other people said. His coach even said,
well, and his coach actually used to be at Ole Miss and coach Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. He said specifically he's got more wiggle than Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. He's a better open field runner. And I've seen that already.
Yeah. I totally noticed that in just one preseason game. When he bounced it outside, you could see that quick burst. You know, he's probably not going to have blazing speed, I think, like you guys pointed out before, but you could just see that little extra gear that you could take it outside if he needs to, which makes, to me, a huge difference.
Right.
Now, granted, who knows what he was playing up against, you know, like, you know, you're going up against twos probably against Jacksonville, so we'll probably
But even Ben Jarvis Green Ellis in the past, when he's gone up against twos, didn't show that, you know, east-to-west movement that Ridley is showing. So it's good. It's very hopeful. But like Paul said, it's going to be committee. He's not going to be a feature back, unless, you know, aside from injuries, he's probably going to have to share the load with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis and Danny Woodhead.
One last question, guys, and I'll let you go about, Ridley. How's his pass blocking? Is it NFL ready? What would you say percentage wise? Because I think that would be the key feature, as in if we'll see a lot of him.
I couldn't tell at this point. I would not be able to answer that.
Yeah.
No.
No, he struggles. He struggles a little bit with that, Anthony. He did struggle with that a little bit in practice. Did a nice job of it in one rep in the game where he came from the left side, I think, all the way to the right. Did a good job of standing up a linebacker, but that's an area of his game that's going to have to improve.
Right. I think they're not going to initially trust him out there.
No, he's probably going to be in the game in running situations, or they're going to throw the ball to him.
Yep. The other guy I want to talk about who, you know, over the last week has just come on like gangbusters is Welker. This guy said yesterday that he feels better than he's ever felt. It's a contract year. You know, surprise, surprise. But he has looked quicker than I've seen him really ever in practice. And he's catching everything. I mean, last year he had a lot of drops for anybody, especially for Wes Welker, because he's always been a guy that catches 99% of the balls thrown his way. He had more than the typical Wes Welker last year, and you didn't see the burst that you had this year. Boy, I can't wait to see him out there. This guy's going to catch 150 passes the way he's going. I mean, he is unstoppable out there on one-on-one, and I can't see them double-teaming him because, you know, then you're going to leave Ocho Cinco and Branch open, or Gronkowski. So I'm looking for a big, big year from Wes Welker.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly share your enthusiasm, especially for the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
It's like he rose to a different level. And I did find it very interesting yesterday. He said initially that he feels great and that he felt, I think he said the first time, better than I felt in a long time.
Yeah.
And then later on, he was sort of asked to follow up on that a little bit. You said you're feeling great, and he said, honestly, this is the best I've felt in my entire career.
Wow.
Now, that's
big.
And you touched on it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's irrelevant. I think it's a contract year. He's going to be a free agent. I think he's trying to tell everybody, Patriots, everybody else too, look, that's over.
Yeah.
That knee thing, that's over. I'm fine. I'm back to myself. Nick Caserio mentioned, unsolicited, by the way, yesterday, that he appears to have regained that quickness, that burst that he had. So I think that where you might see that, not necessarily in the number of catches, but some of the plays that he makes after the catch.
Yeah,
I don't think he was able to elude a lot last year. I think if he is indeed back to that, you know, the pre-injury Wes Welker, then I would expect to see that yards per catch rise a little bit.
Yeah, I tell you, I cannot wait. He's really opened my eyes over the last few days, and you know, I just think it's a
Saturday when the three of us, you, Eric, and I, Saturday, he was immense.
Yeah,
it was Gronkowski like earlier in camp, where there were days that just Gronkowski looked like he was the only guy out there.
Right.
Well, that's what Welker looked like on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a noticeable quickness difference that you will see from Wes Welker this year. Let's go to some of the emails, webradio@patriots.com. Tiffin, Wisconsin, writes in, I want to say I loved the pregame social. I thought the chemistry between Andy and Paul was great. I felt like I was having a Riesling at the bar with you guys. That's the idea. That's what we want you to be doing.
What is that, though, he was having?
Riesling is a beer.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, it's a wine.
Oh,
it's a Riesling is a wine.
All right.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, because I think that would be the ultimate compliment, because that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Vito was such a douche, but he made the show better. I enjoyed the back and forth between Vito and Andy. I thought Andy's response, quote, they throw a parade for a record like that in Jacksonville, was brilliant. It burns so good, Andy. I really want to thank Fred for his fall lineup. Living in Wisconsin, otherwise known as Packerville, I don't get to spend a lot of time with fellow Patriots fans, so I appreciate as much of this as I can get. I'm also looking forward to more Pete Shepard. Is it bad that I love the pregame social and only kind of like the postgame show? I just don't know how I feel about Andrew Jones yet. Well, I think you're going to warm up.
It's Adam Jones.
Adam, yeah. Andrew Jones plays for the Braves.
Yankees.
Oh, is he moved over from the Braves?
Yes.
Anyway, no, Adam.
Been on the Dodgers in between.
Adam is a true professional, and you're going to warm up to him. He's going to conduct a really good postgame show. And, you know, Tiff, you mentioned about the fall lineup. Obviously, we're going to be on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 12 to 2, as we always have been during the season. John Rook in Patriots Playbook will be 2 to 4, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And Pete Shepard is expanded the show, not him. He was on just Thursdays last year. Now he's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 4 to 6. With B-Lo joining him on Thursdays for the B-Lo lowdown for fantasy. So you'll get your fantasy fix on Thursday during the Pete Shepard show. And then, of course, there's Patriots Monday on Monday, which started this week, and Patriots Friday on Friday, and the pregame social and the postgame show. So we've got it all going on here. We're excited about it.
Freddie, another one of the rule changes, you know, that seems to be getting a lot of attention is this whole kickoff thing.
Right.
Which I think is also a bit overblown.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you have to kick off 5 yards closer, so the touchbacks are going to rise. I mean, Bill said it last Saturday. He would expect touchbacks to rise significantly. Today, he was asked a lot of questions about it. You know, I noticed on the Monday night game a little bit last night, they were talking about a lot of the special teams coaches, and I think they were talking about Mike Westhoff specifically with the Jets. They've basically instructed their kick returner to line up about 5 yards deep in the end zone. And if you have to go back, you don't come out. If you go forward, you know, you make your own decision. And so Bill was asked questions about that, if he's had any kinds of stuff. And he said it's going to be a part of the process. It's going to be, you know, some getting used to. You're going to have to learn that in terms of returners. But then he kind of branched off into a whole bunch of other special teams aspects. Do you maybe instruct your kicker? You and I talked about this on Saturday. I would think every single kicker in the league could get a touchback anytime he wanted, kicking from the 35-yard line. But do you instruct your kicker not to try to do that, but instead kick it as high as you can and drop it around the goal line?
I think if you have faith in your coverage team, you do.
But and Bill said you have 5 yards less to cover now.
Right.
So you're down there quicker. if you can hang it high and drop it on the goal line, the guy has to come out. Well, now you have a chance to get him inside the 15, or, you know, inside the 10 even at times. And most of those kickoffs on Thursday night, I don't think there was a, I think there was only one that the returner got outside the 20. And that was the one that the Jacksonville guy broke.
Yeah.
I think every other one was inside the 20. Now, if you can do that and you can force some three and outs, you know, and Bill said it, he goes, well, we had it on Thursday and we got him down, I think, at the 17. We forced a three and out, bad punch. Remember the 14-yard punt by Turk?
Yep.
And all of a sudden we score, we kick off, we get him inside the 20, force a three and out, bad punt, we score. You know, it happens very quickly. And I think that's what some teams are going to try to do. Now, he mentioned, he said, against Chicago, I'm going to guess you're going to get touchbacks on every kick. No one's going to give Hester
right.
a chance, hang it high or not. Not too many teams are going to give Hester a chance. Not too many teams have a guy like Hester.
Right.
So I think it's going to be interesting. He also mentioned cover guys, you know, in terms of your roster makeup.
Yep.
The whole press conference today was about this.
Yeah.
It was like every question was about kickoffs, returns, special teams. Maybe you don't have as many of those guys that are just cover guys.
Specialists.
Because if you're not going to get as many chances to cover kicks.
Yep.
So these are all things that play into the roster makeup.
Yeah, it's a ripple effect. When they make, you know, it seems like, oh, you know, they're moving the ball 5 yards. It makes a big, huge difference. And it will evolve. Coaches will learn, and they'll evolve, and smart coaches will take advantage of it or find ways to take advantage of it, and others won't. You know, like, remember, what's his name, Mike Martz? Maybe I should spend a little bit more time thinking about special teams.
Jason Lecanfora, by the way, just a factoid. Patriots currently have $9.5 million in cap room. I don't know if that is...
Well, Strippers just sent us
I don't know if that is pre or post Mankins.
Yep. Yeah, Strippers just sent us that. I don't know where he got it. 9.5.
Jason Lecanfora.
Yep. Well, he didn't cite him, but... So, anyway. Let's see. Let's go to Alex in Falmouth. Hey there, men of PFW. Not a real exciting topic, I admit, but I believe this year's draftees missed the camp the NFL has conducted for rookies in recent years. That several days to a week of discussion / instruction about money management, dealing with the media, substance abuse, etc. What's the plan for getting that information to those guys playing in the league for the first time in 2011, or are they out of luck? They did cancel that.
They canceled the official NFL Rookie Symposium, but did they not have one for the NFLPA?
The NFLPA was going to do their own.
Yeah, I believe they did.
Did they actually do it?
Yeah, I think they did.
Okay, and I'm sure that, you know, back channels worked with the league to get the same information out to
you know, and
guys.
I don't want to downplay the significance of things like that because I do think they're important, and I think the more times you can hammer home these sort of lessons, the better for these kids. But teams do it too. You know, they go to the Rookie Symposium wherever it is, and they also come here and they have guys that are in charge of that kind of stuff within each individual organization. So I'm not saying that there's not a chance that these guys are going to stray from the straight and narrow, because we know they will. But my point is, you can give them all the information you want and you can educate them as well as you possibly can. There's still going to be people that screw up.
Right.
It's not going to be because they didn't have a rookie symposium this year. I do think it's significant. Like I said, I think the email makes a good point.
I think the NFL has, and teams have, you know, have an obligation to do everything reasonable to give them information. But like you said, once they leave the facility, they're on their own.
The story that we always talk about, that you and I, that the late Will McDonough, former
right.
Boston Globe columnist, tells us all the time.
Yep.
He was playing golf with Bill Belichick once, and all of a sudden, Bill just stopped in the middle of a swing. And Will was like, "What's the matter?" And he's like, "You never know what these guys are
right.
doing."
Right. This is the off season, and Will.
You
said
never know what these guys are doing.
He said, "Bill, you're going to drive yourself crazy. You can't control these guys."
And by the way, this was back when Bill was in Cleveland.
That's
I
right.
Think.
That's right.
So that's how long ago it was. These guys, like I said, the emailer makes a very good point about the rookie symposium. But you can give them all the information. You can't make them heed it. You
right.
know.
Toussaint. Writes in. I think that's the correct
Eric word. Might be happy with
yeah.
that.
Oh, by the way, Eric got a sweater from
Mike in Cambridge.
Mike in Cambridge, and we're going to
yes,
give
it's an old Pat Patriot sweatshirt.
Yeah, we're going to give it to Eric when he gets here. He hasn't seen it yet, but it's on the back, the number is 69, and above it, it says Chaz.
Yeah, and I said old Pat Patriot. I just meant the logo was old. It's a new sweatshirt. He bought it and had
right,
it had
right.
it made. I don't want to make it.
So should we make Eric yeah. wear it certain times?
Oh, or? I think we should make him wear it all the time.
Yeah.
How's that?
So Toussaint.
Game day. We'll make him wear it on game day.
What's up, Fred and the gang? It's been a while since I've emailed because I can no longer listen live with the new website. Well, why is that? I don't understand. Check
you
your browser.
You tell me, it's your website.
Yeah, you can also listen live on your phone. But anyway, over the weekend, a lot of people have been reporting Haynesworth or Ocho will be cut. I find it hard to believe since none of the mainstream websites are reporting this. Tell me what you think. Paul, I mean, I know this all started with Dan Pompey.
Yeah, I want to stress this before you get into this. Dan Pompey is a very, very well-respected writer. He did not make this up. Somebody told him this because he cited an NFL source who was, I think he said, familiar with the Patriots the Patriots do things.
He said a non-NFL executive.
Who's familiar
a non-Patriots executive.
Right, but someone familiar with the Patriots way of doing things or something along that line. I just want to stress that Dan Pompey is a respected guy. Now, I'm with you because I know where you're going. I think there's a 0% chance that this is valid. Zero. I'll tell you right now, it absolutely is zero with Ocho Cinco. He got a $4.5 million signing bonus. There is no way, short of him doing something really bad off the field, there is no way that he is getting cut before he plays when they just handed the guy $4.5 million.
And that's the thing. You can say anything about Bill Belichick and what he might do if you use the word could. Well, yeah, if Ocho Cinco screws up, he could get cut. If Albert Haynesworth...
No, I'm saying right now. Because he wrote that not saying that something's going to happen. This guy, whoever told this to Dan Pompey is saying there's a chance one of them could get cut. Not that there's a chance one of them can get arrested tomorrow and then they'll cut him. That's not what he said.
But he also said they could get cut to send a message.
Yeah.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
0.0, Mr. Blutarski.
Yeah.
No chance.
So if you're Dan Pompey, do you report that? I mean, it's the guy's.
I would report it, I would say I'm not buying it.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying? He writes for I think it was the National Football Post that he put it on initially. So that's a blog. I mean, you can write your opinion. It's not just a beat writer, and you're not allowed to sort of analyze. Listen, I had someone tell me this. I don't think there's any chance of it happening. What's wrong with that?
Right. But couldn't I just say, Jack Del Rio could cut David Garrard just to send a message? I mean, I guess I could say that, but has Belichick ever cut people just to send a message? Where's the history that you back this statement up with? Has he brought in high-priced free agents,
he's
paid them $5 million, and then cut them to send a message?
Yeah, see, that's the part of it that's to me, impossible. He sent messages before. I mean, the whole late thing, I think, was a message.
Well, sure. That's discipline.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, that's what this guy is saying is going to happen. The guy's not on the practice field, so he could cut him.
Yeah.
I don't think there's I can't even give it a 1% chance. Remember when I said before Tom Brady signed his contract extension, less than 1% chance that he doesn't sign and he goes? I don't give this as much of a chance as that.
Mm. Dan in Florida has the same thing. He says, hey, fellas, in the famous Ray Ray. Every year, Bill makes some surprise cuts. While I don't necessarily believe these new rumors about Haynesworth or Ocho getting cut, we all know there will be a few cuts that raise eyebrows. Who would you put on your surprise cut list? And also, with Dane Fletcher, he looked good the other night. Is he more of a Teddy Bruschi in the making or just another Matt Shatham? I don't know.
He's probably somewhere in the middle of those two.
Yeah.
I think he has the potential to be more than Matt Shatham. Matt Shatham was strictly a special teams player who filled in occasionally at outside linebacker. I think Dan Fletcher is more than that, but kind of tough to put him in a Teddy Bruschi category in terms of playmaking and all that. Now, the similarities are there, and Bill Belichick is the one that used the comparison initially when he said, interior defensive lineman in college that made the transition to inside linebacker. Not a lot of defense. I mean, he was a defensive end, I think at Montana or Montana State? One of those. Big Sky Bob will correct us because we always mess that one up. But he was a defensive end at the 1AA level, and he came out and played inside linebacker. That's a very rare transition for the NFL. And Bill talked about Teddy Bruschi being one of the few guys that did something like that. I think he had an old giant, maybe Harry Carson, but he had an old giant that he also threw in there, I forget. So I guess you could sit there and say, well, there's some similarities to Bruschi there, but I'm not ready to say Dane Fletcher is going to be the next Teddy Bruschi. That's high praise in New England.
KB from Atlanta says, thanks for the pregame show. I had a blast the whole day. quick question. What did you think of Ridley's performance, and do you think he could be number three back behind Ben Jarvis, Green, Ellison, Woodhead? Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what we said.
Yeah.
He's going to be in that committee.
Yeah, there's different – I understand they're all running backs. They're different running backs. You know, he's going to be with Ben Jarvis, Green, Ellis as a potential
– first or second down back.
Yeah, a potential ball carrier
in
normal running situations, whereas Woodhead is going to get his carries out of spread opportunities on the sprint draws and stuff like that. He's not going to get many first and 10 carries in between the tackles.
Right.
He's almost all of Woodhead's carries are going to be out of the shotgun.
And when you look at Woodhead come to the line when he has the ball, I know he's low to begin with, but his pads are high. He's looking for a hole and he's looking to move east-west to bounce it out. Whereas, you know, you kind of want a guy on first and second down who is just going to hit the hole, pads low, and get what's there. So Woodhead is, like Paul said, a very different type of runner than Ben Jarvis, Green, Ellis, and Ridley is. So there's a big difference there. Phones are stacking up here at 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's go to Phil in Alabama, who wants to know what's going on with Darius Butler. Hey, Phil. Phil. Oh, did I just drop him? Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. I thought I hit air. I don't know, maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not. If you're saying it's my fault, okay, it's my fault. But, I don't think it was me. Anyway, Steve in Georgia. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you guys doing?
Good, Steve. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to I was with you guys as far as the Haynesworth and Ocho Cinco as far as being cut, because I felt the same way. Bill doesn't really make statements and try to set example in the locker room. It's already done. I think Bill is really doing the same way they did Randy Moss back when Randy Moss first came to the Patriots. Everybody was wondering if he was going to play. He wasn't playing in the preseason. He was riding a bike. And I think Bill is just saving Haynesworth to the regular season. What do you guys think?
It's funny that you say that, because we were talking about in the media tent just before we came here, and Moss was the exact example that people mention of how what they're doing with Haynesworth is just like what they did with Moss. So that worked out all right, right?
Yeah, I think that there was a physical thing with Moss, and I think this is more maintenance with Haynesworth.
Well, yeah, but I think it's physical.
Yeah I don't think
– thanks for the call, Steve.
I think that Moss went out on the practice field and dominated for a while.
Right.
We haven't seen that.
Well, Haynesworth
– for one day.
I know. But he was out there.
You know, he pushed Richard Ohrenberger back one day.
Okay, all right.
You know, I think there's some maintenance issues going on with Haynesworth. They're getting him, in shape to play. And I also think there's an element. This is where the similarities with Moss could be. I think there's an element that Bill has seen what he needed to see out of Haynesworth and knows what he can do. I think he's here every day. As far as I know, I think he's here every day. He's in the meeting rooms. He's watching. He's learning. And I think there might be part of Bill that says, all right, I know what I have here. I don't need to show everybody else in the league what I have here.
Right.
So I don't need to put him out there in the preseason and let teams get tape on him. I don't need him to be on the practice field every day so those jerks in the media, like us, are going to start writing about how good he looks.
Right.
So let's, you know, if they can create a little negativity around it, and, you know, let's bring this all full circle and get back to the whole source that may have told Dan Pompey this. Don't dismiss that source being somewhere close to right here in Foxborough. Maybe someone that Bill trusts, Bill kind of says, hey, see if you can get this out there. You know, maybe the Miami Dolphins then say, well, he hasn't practiced all summer, hasn't played in the preseason.
Right.
They're thinking about cutting him.
Yep.
I'm not going to have to worry much about him opening night.
Right. And, you know,
is that outrageous?
It isn't. And I'll tell you who was a master of that was Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
He could manipulate the media.
I mean, do you really think the New York Jets, way back on opening day of 2007, had any inkling that Randy Moss was capable of doing what he did that day?
Right. Right.
He hadn't played all preseason. There was a story very similarly that Randy Moss was going to get cut. Do you remember that?
I don't, but I'll believe you.
There was a story that came out the week before cuts that Randy Moss was going to get cut. Same kind of real mysterious source.
Right.
You know, close to the, but not anything concrete. Obviously, we know that was never even open to debate. There was never thoughts of getting rid of Randy Moss.
Yep.
I think there might be part of it that, you know, Bill's playing a little bit of a court. I'm not saying specifically that he planted this, but I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Maybe he had someone that he knows who did him a favor, went to Pompey and said, they're thinking about cutting him. And all of a sudden, teams that are playing the Patriots in September are saying, well, I don't have to really worry about Haynesworth. He hasn't even been out there.
Right. 15-1. Phil in Alabama's back there. Phil,
who's the loss?
Did I hang up on you?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bill, though.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Great, Phil.
Just been listening to the show for about a week. I love what you guys got going on here.
All right, where you been?
I'm a big Patriots fan. I'm actually from Detroit, so, you know, Michigan, the whole Tom Brady thing.
Okay.
But I had a question about Darius Butler, actually. I was wondering, have you guys seen a lot of him in practice? How's he looking? I mean, he's not really showing me anything, and I'm trying to see if he's going to make this roster or not. What's going on with
him? I think he's hanging by a thread. And he is one of my guys. I like him a lot. I loved him in the pre-draft process. In terms of practice, I think Bill's given him every opportunity. He's been out there a lot with McCourty and Bodden with three cornerback sets. He and Arrington have been kind of flip-flopping. He's been on the outside. He's been in the slot. Lately, he's been returning kicks with Edelman and Price out. He's been returning some kicks. I think Bill's given him a lot of opportunities to do something. On the practice field, he's been competitive but not good. He's generally there, but rarely makes the play. And yesterday was a perfect example. He was inside the guy's shirt and still couldn't prevent a completion, and it was Jeremy Ross.
Yeah, and I've seen
an undrafted free agent.
I've seen McCourty make plays. I've seen Gerard Mayo knock down a ball.
Bodden and McCourty have been very, very good.
I haven't honestly seen Butler make a play.
No, and then during the game, I think his play during the game on Thursday was vastly overblown. He was nowhere near as bad as people were writing.
Yeah.
I thought that he and Arrington both, I thought, got beat pretty regularly in the first half. The balls weren't always complete. There were a couple of bad drops by Jacksonville guys.
And some bad throws.
And some bad throws by Gabbert.
Right.
I didn't think Bodden was any worse than anybody else that played defensively on set, but he seemed to get the broad. But I think that
he's the new Ellis Hobbs.
He's playing a lot, and Jonathan Wilhite is not. Now, I don't know if that's because Bill knows what he has in Wilhite, and he wants to make sure he gives Butler a longer look here, but I think that one of those two guys is going to get cut, and I think they're both hanging by a thread.
Does that answer your question, Phil?
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay, keep listening, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. Call back next week.
That's Phil from Alabama. 508-298-0398 is the email address. Let's see. What do we got here on the got a lot of emails right here. Which one should we go to? Let's go to...
I don't have them in front of me.
Paul in L.A., can you guys talk about Darius Butler? Well, we just did, so I'm not going to go to that one. I just can't decide.
Why don't you take a break and actually read some emails? That way you might be prepared.
We probably should take a break. We've been like over an hour without a break.
Yeah.
And just to remind people that in the last half hour...
Yeah, the losers might be back.
Eric and Andy will be back with their report from the remainder of practice in player availability. So we have that to look forward to. Let's take a break and I'll get my act together with the emails.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place, shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson here to tell you about the second annual Mosi Tutupu Comedy Benefit. The Mosi Tutupu Comedy Benefit is back and better than ever. Tuesday evening, August 23rd, will feature special appearances by Hall of Famers John Hanna, Andre Tippett, Gino Capoletti, as well as current and former professional athletes and local celebrities at Gillette Stadium. The evening will feature comedy performances by headliners Lenny Clark, Paul D'Angelo, Paul Narduzzi, Steve Sweeney, and more. With live auctions, silent auctions, and nonstop laughter, this event is a fun evening you won't want to miss. All proceeds will benefit the Mosi Tutupu Memorial Scholarship Foundation, which provides college scholarships to young athletes with learning differences, exemplifying the outstanding qualities that characterize our dear friend Mosi Tutupu. Last year's event sold out quickly, so be sure to purchase your tickets today. Visit the Patriots.com website for more details and to purchase your tickets. I look forward to seeing you at the second annual Mosi Tutupu Comedy Benefit.
He's the model of speed and precision, a machine that picks apart defenses. This is Wes Welker, part of a last-minute drive to the end zone. He's constantly on the move, and he moves fast. You're just as fast. Introducing Verizon 4G LTE, the fastest, most advanced 4G network in America. With it, you can download a song from VCast Rhapsody faster than the average play can develop. Upload your favorite photo in 6 seconds. Share 10 photos in a minute. Stream video like you're watching an instant replay through a window. It's that smooth, that fast. And it's the only 4G network that can compete with Wes Welker.
Yeah, let's go again.
To learn more about Verizon 4G, visit your local Verizon store for a live demo or visit VerizonWireless.com/4GLTE. Rule the air. Verizon. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops. Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Patriots than Andy Hart?
That's it.
I was so wrong.
Prove it. Inside the Patriots pregame social. The pregame social is the only interactive radio pregame show that lets you be a part of the show.
People won't like this show.
So what are you waiting for? Join the Patriots pregame social every game day, live on the Patriots Facebook page.
All right, back here in PFW in progress. Speaking of the pregame social, Larry's not happy. He says, I'm sorry if the pregame show is not important enough to put on the audio on your site. Then I will not hear it. I do not care about pictures, reading emails. That's the host job. Texts, etc. Can't win them all. Well, I'm sorry, Larry, but I don't think it's much of a difference of going to our Facebook page than it is on the site. You're going to miss out if you don't listen. So I think you'll be back. Let's see. What else we got here? Sebastian writes in from Mannheim, Germany. No Andy or Eric today? Well, they'll be back about 1:30 with the update. He says, would you guys have any interest in adding or even just working out Aaron Maben? From what I've read on NFL.com, he always had a good work ethic but just couldn't produce in the field. Could that simply be system-related, or is there basically no chance of a push by joining a new team slash different defense? We know the Bills cut him. I couldn't find any numbers on the remaining amount of his contract, but it totaled at $25 million over 5 years. So
it'd be nothing. He got cut.
So I figure there should be about $1 to $1.5 guaranteed left per the next 3 years.
No, he was cut. So if you sign him, you sign him to whatever you want.
Not too much for the potential. So what do you think about Maben?
It's my single greatest misread in my pre-draft history, which goes back to what, 2000?
The 40s with Paul.
2000.
Yeah.
It was the first draft that I worked for you.
Right.
I would say my top three would be Aaron Maben, Vernon Golston, and I don't know, we'll probably put someone else in there. But I just missed. I thought the guy was an athletic freak, and evidently I was wrong. You know, it's funny. The Bears, I guess, are looking at him.
Yep.
They're the ones that signed Golston, too. So imagine they take these two top, you know what, I think Maben was 11th overall and
right.
Golston was 6th. Just colossal busts. But no, I you know, there's probably some athleticism there. And if it were the offseason, I would be interested in taking a look at that and you know, kicking the, much like I said during the offseason about Golston. I think right now what you're trying to do, I'm not sure that you want to come in and bring a new guy in and have him learn it. You don't know what he can do because he hasn't done anything.
508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Brad in the Eastern Shores on the line. Thanks for holding on, Brad.
Hey, not a problem at all, guys. And you know what? That show was awesome. I don't know what that other guy's problem is. I agree. It's a hassle to go to Facebook.
No, he didn't listen to it. He didn't say the show was bad.
Why,
he didn't listen to it.
But, you know, why was it a hassle to go to Facebook?
Well, because the site didn't tell you you had to go to Facebook. So for 15 minutes, I was fighting with radio.com trying to get it to load.
All right.
Finally called Kevin, and Kevin's like, no, we know it's a problem, but you got to go to Facebook.
We'll fix that so that it's very clear and make sure all the links take you right to the show. So I can understand if someone was confused. But it's you know, as far as...
No, some people didn't want to go to Facebook because they don't like Facebook.
Yeah,
but... They didn't want to do it.
It's not like we were making you
James,
create an account.
James.
No, and it's.
I won't listen because I don't do Facebook.
Okay. I'm not a big Facebook person, but you know what? It wasn't a problem. Once Kevin said, no, just click on the Facebook link, I went right there. It opened right up. Paul and Andy were talking away with the idiot from Jacksonville, and it was a riot.
Now, Stellino's been there for how long? Since they started.
He's an old guy. I know he's covered some other teams. I think he was from, I think he used to work for the Baltimore Sun.
Okay.
Strippers sent in, you know, not surprisingly, strippers had the whole bio there for us. But yeah, he's been around for a while and I just didn't realize, I knew he was kind of a crotchety old man, but I didn't realize to that extent.
Jeez. What else you got,
well,
Brad?
I told Ray Ray, it is so nice to hear you guys talking real football again. I know you guys were doing yeoman's work to keep us going during the lockout, but it's nice to hear the real stuff again.
Well, you'll hear some other stuff, too, eventually.
Paul, with your regards to the kickoffs, I think these kickoffs are going to equal more punts, which means we're going to put more emphasis on punt returning than ever across the league.
Well, that's a trickle-down.
I'm not sure they're going to lead to more punts, but they're going to lead to better field position, I think. I think the punts might take place deeper in your own territory.
But what happens when you – if you're right, and I totally agree with you, I think it would be much better for Gostkowski – to land the ball at the 3-yard line and have Slater, if he makes the team, but
miss the tackle at the 5.
Have him be at the 10-yard line when the guy's catching it at the 3.
Yeah. Now, I think that, you know, in listening to Bill today, he did say that there's going to be some situational stuff that is going to be part of strategy. You know, depending on where you are and the time of game and what you're looking for. There might be something to that. I do expect to see some of that.
Well, I think you're going to run a team that gets tackled like Jacksonville did at the 8-yard line or 9-yard line, whatever that guy got.
It happened
on.
To us too.
It
happened to the Patriots the whole game. We didn't get one outside the 20.
Well, we've had struggles with that for a while.
But we moved the ball. Is my
right.
point.
But
I mean,
saying
you don't have to get stopped.
But you're going to have teams that aren't Patriot Colt, you know, prospect teams.
Yeah, but most
you're
teams
gonna get
move the ball
at the 9-yard line. What are you gonna do? You're gonna run it. You're gonna run a first down run, you're gonna run a second down run, and you're gonna run a very conservative pass play, and if it's not there, you're gonna throw it away and you're gonna punt.
I don't know about that. I don't think most teams would do that. I think most teams would try to move the ball and get it. Now when you're on your own one, you know, teams might get a little bit conservative, but I don't think they get overly conservative.
But you're not going to want your quarterback getting an 8-yard sack when you're on the 10-yard line.
Well, I'm not gonna want him getting an 8-yard sack when I'm on the 30 either. To me, if you have a bad offense with a bad quarterback, you're probably not going to move the ball. And it makes it tougher when you're right. It makes it tougher when you have bad field position, but I don't think it's going to lead to more punts. I think it's going to lead to punts in better field position.
Yeah.
And that's what Bill talked about with, you know, they scored, then they kick off, they tackled them at the 17, they get a 3-and-out, a bad punt, and all of a sudden they get the ball back at about the 30-yard line, and they go right back in. They get 14 points in about, what, 3 minutes of playing time. I think you could see that a lot. I think the Patriots' offense isn't going to be subjected to that bad feel. That's not really going to – I mean, it's not a great thing, but I think the Patriots' offense will deal with that, whereas – some other teams, that might help the Patriots' defense because they're just not that good.
Right. Well, I agree. And I think, you know, I just think it's going to give us a chance to put more pressure early in early downs as teams, you know, maybe aren't quite so aggressive when they're deep in their own.
Yeah, no, I could see, I could see that. I could see that, Brad.
All right. Brad chiming in from the Eastern Shore.
Patriots offensive line, Freddie, was awarded the Madden trophy today.
They're going to get that, yeah.
Yeah, so they had that trophy here today. It was this big, like, massive humanity in this, like, blob of bronze or something. I don't even know what it was, but.
James in the UK says, enjoyed your pregame social, Paul and Andy, but the highlight was definitely an insight into the bitterness that other fans and writers have for Belichick and the Patriots in general. I was genuinely shocked to hear what that D-bag had to say and what sort of delusions people can create for themselves when they don't win. Did you talk to him in the press box when you got up there?
No.
Over the weekend, I was watching some of the highlights from preseason and thinking about teams who play the 3-4 and the 4-3. Was wondering if you thought it would be worth a team being able to genuinely play both formations.
The Patriots can.
This thought came to me after thinking about the teams like, say, the Colts, who, while they have certain strengths in their base defense, originality really isn't one of them. Their mindset generally seems to be, we play 4-3 in Tampa 2, beat us if you can. You have to deal with Freeney and Mathis in some way, and your blocking schemes must take them into account. Yeah. If, however, you didn't know if a team was going to come out in a 4-3 or the 3-4 base, would game plans and blocking schemes be made considerably harder for an opponent's preparation? Might this be a reason to at least experiment with formation changes, or would personnel be able to fit both systems, be too much of a jack-of-all-trades and not elite enough to make both work?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I do think the latter is true. I think it would be very hard to just get the personnel overnight. The Colts have used that system for a long time. I think you'd render Mathis and Freeney, I don't know if they'd be able to play standing up as outside linebackers. And even if they could, they don't have the bulk with their other guys to be those 3-4 ends that you would need. So certainly don't have a guy really that could man the nose. I think that would be a dramatic overhaul of what you do on defense. And unlike most people, I don't think it's any harder to find that personnel than it is any other personnel. I think when you're trying to find elite players is tough. You know, finding Freeney for them was not easy. They had to invest a high first-round pick in him.
Right.
When a lot of people didn't think he was worth a first-round pick at the time, if you recall, he was so small. So the outside linebackers that the Patriots have had a hard time finding, same thing. You know, it's good players that are elite are hard to find. It's not necessarily fitting those players into, you know, change your system so your players are easier to find. Andre Carter was the 7th overall pick in the draft. Who the Patriots have basically said he's going to be, it looks to me anyway, and it's good to have Andy and Eric here to get another opinion. It looks to me like he's going to be a big part of this defense. He looks like a dynamic guy on the edge, and he might be able to do some stuff for them that they haven't had an element of in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Right. Brett and Brockton. Now, if you come to Patriots.com every day, you know that we started broadcasting Patriots Monday yesterday with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, but Brett doesn't like it. He says, I'm sick of Glenn Ordway's, oh, Coach Bill, you're awesome, and please let me kiss your ass for a half-hour Patriots Monday broadcast. Guys, do you know when Ordway's contract is up? Would the men of PFW try and pick up the Patriots Monday contract? I think the fans would benefit from the NFL-educated questions and answers that can only come from the PFW staff. What do you think?
PFW would definitely be interested in such a
yeah, I don't know if
it would
be any more or less kiss ass, though, because, you know, you got to have... Andy's here. No,
I don't think
your mic's not
on.
Hello?
Yeah, much better.
Ray,
can you hear me now?
No, I can't hear you.
I can hear Andy.
Can you hear me now, Andy?
Now I can.
Yay. Yeah.
All right.
We would not be as kiss ass as they are.
Pass me a cup there, homie.
Well, I can tell you I wouldn't be.
Actually,
I can't.
You know what? I got one.
I have a certain thing to me that I can't shut off. And if we did it every week, the first couple of weeks I'd be on best behavior. And at some point, Snyder Marks would slip out.
And that would be it. you
probably.
Or he would no longer be on the show.
Well, that would be fine with me if that happened, as long as I felt I was being fair.
Yeah.
You know, for example, the fourth down and two play in Indianapolis, if he got, you know, his nose bent out of joint about questioning, that's what he has preached all along.
But to be fair to Glenn, and they do kiss ass a lot, but to be fair to Glenn, specifically after that game, they did question him about fourth and two and disagree with him. I remember that specifically.
Yeah, and then after that, they went to his line of thinking that it was the right play.
Well, but while he was on the show, they didn't run
just,
away.
I mean,
from
I just used that as an example. I mean, and the emailer is right. They even when they question him, they don't really question him. It's like they question him because they feel like they have to. Well, you know, Bill, you've won three Super Bowls, and obviously your credentials are beyond compare. But do you really think it was the right play to go for it on fourth and two? That's how they go into those critical questions. And I'm exaggerating to make a point, but you know what I mean.
They do it somewhat apologetically, you mean?
Yeah, Eric.
Yeah, what's this?
You have a present today from one of our listeners, Mike in Cambridge.
Yeah.
Because?
I don't know.
Just because
you're
you.
He just likes it. Why don't you open it up?
It's a.
He was outside the tent today.
Yeah.
And then he saw Fred come over, come out, and he called us over and introduced himself and said that he had something for you and he wanted to give it to you.
The shirt or something else.
Yeah.
Show Andy.
Did you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Eric, tell everyone what it is.
Well, he ruined a perfectly good throwback.
No, it's not cool.
It's not cool.
Oh, you're such
it's not cool.
It's cool because it's a blue throwback Patriots. It looks like one of those customized NFL
sweater.
Shop,
yeah.
Sweatshirts. But there's a 69 on the back, and it says Chaz.
What's wrong with that?
Chaz is not my name, nor my nickname, nor will it ever be.
Embrace it.
No.
The guy gave you a gift.
Nor will it ever be.
You're not even going to say thank you?
Thank the guy for making fun of me.
Yes, it's a gift. It's a gift.
He thanked the guy for making fun of me.
To spend his hard-earned money on you.
That's not as good-looking pizza as you normally get.
Yeah, I know. It was a bad practice today, too. It's a bad day all around.
It was dull. Anything good happen after practice? I know that they gave the trophy to the offensive line for that Madden Protector.
Brian Morey.
Brian Morey gave it to them?
He was he was there in the middle of the Prilosec.
No, really.
He really
if you
was.
Watch the news tonight, it's him.
You just can't get enough of this stuff.
It really is.
He was right in the middle of it all.
Oh, was he speaking? Did he speak?
Yes, he presented it.
Did he do it
on behalf of Prilosec OTC?
I don't know. I was talking to players.
Clapping their hands together.
I was being entertained by Rob Gronkowski at the time, who makes me laugh.
So who else spoke? I know that
Serge.
So you talked to Serge. Do you have anything good to say?
Not really. I hope not.
Best behavior. Yeah.
Because his playing time will dip if he does.
Don't talk with your mouth full. Serge is Sergio Brown. Yes. I take it. Okay.
Who's been rotating with the first group of safeties, rotating through with Merriweather and Chung.
He stayed in there today. Yesterday he was basically with the first group. Today he stayed in there.
Rotating. Getting some reps.
What else happened after practice?
Well, I didn't see it because the PR department gave us the wrap up. All right, guys, let's go down. And then later we saw some celebration field goals and apparently Welker and Ocho
both missed field goals.
Wide left. But again, I got to stop listening to the PR department.
Literally
the most entertaining part of practice, no one saw.
Did other people? No. So no one stayed up there?
Like one or two people, maybe. I don't know.
When they tell you to go down, there's no rush. It's just that's when they're going down.
I generally do as I'm told.
You end up standing on the sideline for another 10, 15 minutes.
I usually watch the field goals, but there's no way of knowing that something like that's going to happen. That's unfortunate. But, yeah, both Welker and Ocho Cinco evidently missed 34-yard field goals, according to tweets from various writers, Mike Reese specifically.
508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket hotline.
And both of those guys have kicked here at Gillette Stadium. Right?
Let's go to Sean at Salt Lake.
And connected.
He's looking at me like it didn't happen.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Ocho hit it.
Hey,
deciding
Sean, how you doing? You want to talk about Razai?
Yeah, what's going on with him?
Nothing.
In shorts again today.
Shows up at every practice in shorts and T-shirts.
That's got to be a concern because I think the depth of cornerback, they have a lot of guys that you know, but I don't think they have a lot of answers, beyond those top two. And, you know, I would probably squeak Arrington into the mix with three. But Will Hyten Butler, we talked at length, guys, before you came down. Butler seems like he's getting every opportunity imaginable. Looks like Bill is really intent on getting him as long a look as possible. He's been inside. He's been outside. He's now he's returning kicks.
And I think
he's
acquitted himself pretty well, actually.
I don't think he's made a ton of plays. I love the guy. I love the athleticism.
He doesn't pick
but
up
I
a lot of passes.
I don't think he's made
a lot
of plays.
Down.
Like I thought yesterday, he was right in the shirt of back-to-back defenders and did nothing to break up the back-to-back receivers and did nothing to break up the passes. I think that he and Will Hyde are hanging by a thread. I think one of them is going to go, and I think he knows what Will Hyde can do, and he's given Butler all the opportunities, but I don't think he's taking advantage.
I have to disagree. I have to disagree with Paul.
Physical.
Yeah, he was out there.
Rossi Dowling.
He was out there early in camp.
He had one practice.
Yeah,
he practiced on August 2nd, and then the next night was the in-stadium practice. He was in shorts. He's been in shorts ever since.
Yeah, he tweaked something, and he's. You know, apparently trying to recover from it. What it is, we don't know.
I'm going to guess that he did something in his conditioning run. Probably, you know, pulled a hamstring or something in the conditioning run, but passed it. Thought he was okay to come back and probably tweaked it. And now they're just going to say, let's make sure we get the whole thing. Do you think? I mean, think that's possible? You know, something like that. Because he's out there every day. He's out there in shorts every day. So it can't be like a broken bone or something that he's going to be sidelined with moving forward. But he's missing an awful lot of reps.
Yep. That's not good.
I just want to disagree slightly with
Okay, thanks for the call, Sean.
I just want to disagree slightly with Paul's assessment of Butler. I think he's actually had his best camp so far. I mean, he's not perfect. He's not intercepting passes left and right, but I've seen him knock down more passes and be in the play and make the play more times than I have in previous summers. He might be hanging on a thread still, but I think he's separated himself from Will.
Yeah,
Light.
No, and that's listen. We can agree to disagree. I think that he's had exactly the same camp that he had 2 years ago, and the same camp he had last year. He's always there. He's like Kotosa Wanga. He's always in position. Rarely makes the play to me. And I, you know, one in particular yesterday I saw. He was blanketing the receiver and then did nothing to stop the catch. Another play he would have gotten called for interference on when he kind of spun the guy around. Before, and that ended up being incomplete. And I like this guy. I've been intrigued with his athleticism from the start. I'm rooting for him. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen for him.
Okay.
But I do like the idea of him getting some opportunities to return kicks. Maybe that could be a niche for him. You know, be the fourth cornerback and kick returner. I can live with that.
Did you guys talk about what Bill said about the special teamers today?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Do you think that was interesting?
I do. It's a trickle-down thing. You know, you make a little change, like a 5-yard adjustment on kickoffs, and it trickles down to a lot of different areas.
Did you see Westhoff has told he has his kick returners 7 yards deep, and if you can come forward, return it.
Right. Yeah. No, we talked about
I mentioned
that
last night, too, from last night's game. I think it is going to be a little bit different, and I do think that the strategy is going to come into play. I think Bill is going to probably figure out times where he's going to have Gostkowski, instead of just banging it through the end zone, he's going to try to hang him high.
Has not told him. Have not discussed it yet, according to Gostkowski.
No, yeah.
And said that he has not worked on it. Whatever they want me to do, I'll try to do. He said, it's not something that a kicker does. You don't say, okay, I'm going to put this one 3 yards deep. I'm going to hang this one up 5 yards. You know, it's going to be at the 2. Yeah. He said, He takes a lot of pride. He thinks he's the best at hang time in the league, or one of the best. He's always kicked it as high as he could, and they haven't discussed.
Don't
forget that he hasn't really kicked off yet either.
And they'll start doing those strategic things once the media is out of practice.
Well, it's kind of hard to tell too, because the field isn't the proper length.
Yeah, but you know,
I would have thought they would have discussed it with him.
Yeah. They'll start.
Maybe they have.
Believe me, they will work.
Lying? Yeah.
Bill sort of
protective of.
Based
what they
on Bill's
him.
Answer today, it led me to believe that they haven't. It hasn't really come up yet, but it probably will. Once he said it was going to be largely situational, where you know, depending on the venue, depending on the conditions, depending on the time of the game, the score, there might be times where you know, obviously, if you score with 2.5 minutes left in the game to take a lead, you're going to tell them to bang it out of the back of the end zone. Don't take any chances. Make them go 80 yards to beat us here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, middle of the game might be a time and place where, okay, we can do whatever we want with this as long as we cover it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's see if we can nail them inside the 15 and right. get
yeah,
some
I
field
get the
position.
Impression Gostkowski doesn't really want to do it.
But I think he could kick it normal, if, you know, because I agree with the way he said to what he said to you.
I think he's
about he
at
kicks
it like,
high.
I look at it when I'm like on the edge of the green and have to do a little chip. I generally screw it up, and it's never the same. He wants to be able to just do a normal swing
right.
through, and his normal kick.
Yeah, no,
but I think he could kick him high and land him 5 yards deep in the end zone, and the guy could come out and they could get a ball inside the 15. You know,
no, but he doesn't just want to like his normal. Kick.
I'm not asking him.
He doesn't want to make adjustments.
I agree with you. I'm not asking him to change his kick. I think what he said to you is right, though. I do think he kicks the ball a little higher for the. A lot of the guys that drive the ball for touchbacks, they hit line drives.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
Right.
I agree with him on that. He doesn't kick them low. Like I think every Fred and I talked about this last week. I think every kicker in the league, virtually not all 32, but say 28 kickers could get a touchback anytime they wanted to. But they're afraid that if they don't hit it right, all of a sudden it's highly returnable. So a lot of them kick it a little bit higher or differently than they normally would. Now, 5 yards up, I know every kicker in the league can get a touchback anytime he wants to. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he has to change anything to get the ball high.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Like that. And I think that could be an advantage for
him. What about the fact that Bill acknowledged that the change in returns could have an impact on who he decides to keep in the special teams role on the roster?
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah,
it
diminishes the role of those specialists. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, if you don't need a guy that's like a coverage specialist,
like he says you're just a special teamer.
Potentially, you're going to be covering half as many kicks as you normally would during the course of a season. That's his words, not mine. So if you had a guy that, you know, three or four guys that basically they're cover guys, maybe you don't want to keep them all because they're not as valuable to your team.
Matthew Slater.
Right.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, that's
Tracy White, sure. Matthew Slater, guys like that, you know, that factors into your thinking.
I do want to update today. Matthew Slater, who I think has had his best camp as a receiver yet.
Okay. Yeah, he's made
with
more plays as a receiver.
Today, Wes Welker had to get his leg retaped, and it was a split field thing where the second offense was working with the first defense, first offense working with the second defense, and Welker had to get retaped. They went to a four-receiver set. It was Slater who went in. Now, keep in mind, there's some injuries.
Well, Edelman's not
Price and
there.
Edelman right. and Tate are all
I've
out.
Never,
right.
No. I've never considered Matthew Slater
but he's
a receiver.
Been catching the ball very well.
Eric mentioned that yesterday at practice.
Tyree, I would have thought, would have been ahead of him. Farnham, I would have thought, would have been ahead of him. I don't think Matthew Slater is a receiver.
Well, Farnham was too busy playing cornerback.
For me,
I don't think
to
Farnham's
see him on
him.
The field with Ocho Cinco and Deion Branch, I just think it's interesting.
No, he has had, from a catching standpoint, his best
How camp. Many receivers are there, actually? I mean, because you just took four out of the equation to get him out there.
No, but my point is, they had full receivers down the other field. He wasn't one of those. He's in a second. He's in an upper tier rather than a lower tier.
I mean, Jeremy Ross would be the only guy that
I would say.
Ross
is on that second field.
He would be the only guy that I would say potentially would be ahead of him.
I would
out
put
of those,
Barnes
I,
ahead of him.
Tyree Barnes, really?
I think I literally don't think the words wide receiver should have been associated with Slater in his first 3 years here.
I just think that's a
– Can't catch the ball, can't
just
run
comfort
a route,
with what he's
can't
doing.
Anything.
Yemi from Texas says about the pregame social, why call it the pregame social? It is a pregame show, right? Seems like you guys are just trying to be different. Well, we are, actually.
Sorry we're not just doing what everybody else is
working.
Doing.
Don't get me wrong. I love the show. I want to hear from you guys more. Actually, the only problem with the show is that all the gang won't be there, but you don't have to give the show a special name to make it sound different when it's not. Call a spade, call it the pregame show.
But it is different.
Yeah, there is social aspects to it.
Twitter, Facebook, it's on Facebook.
You know who this guy is? He's Paul Perillo. He's refusing to embrace the social media. The media. It's nothing to do with anger.
Nate wants to know, are you guys doing a third show on Wednesdays this year? And if you are, when are you starting it? We're going to start that the week of September 5th, the week before the first regular season game. That's when we'll start our in-season schedule.
That's a little different, no? Don't we usually do it after?
No, we're going to do it before.
I like it.
Yeah, full schedule, week of September 5th. Although the week after that it's a Monday night game, so the week after will only be on Wednesday and Thursday, but you'll get the picture. Let's see. Josh writes in, a listener just wrote in about not being able to listen live from the new website. I have had the same problem. I think it is somehow related to our company firewall blocking certain types of streaming media. I haven't been able to listen live pages.com proper since the changeover. Thankfully, you all got the problem with the BlackBerry app worked out. That saved the day. I have no idea why someone wouldn't be able to listen to pages.com.
Are we explicit?
No.
Is that like the blue screen we get here when we try to go to
sites? Yeah, I think your IT people are playing jokes on you. I really do.
Yeah, but it's hard to call IT and say, I'm trying to listen to this two-hour radio show in the middle of the day.
Right. They're waiting for the people that do that. Let's see. Erica, I'm really disappointed that you don't like your sweater.
I am, too.
Yeah, the front of it is perfect. It's great. It's
What's
the old
Chaz?
Logo.
What's wrong with Chaz?
Because it's
no one knows that, though.
Everybody who listens to this show knows that.
Yeah, I know, but that's
Chaz like,
Palminteri.
Somebody could
be walking down the streets of North Providence and someone
Italian
will be like,
tough guy actor.
Right.
No. He
what do you call
night.
Him?
Yeah, tough guy Italian actor known for mafia roles.
Yeah.
Right.
He was on the other night. I watched whatever one of the movies he's in.
Bronx Tale?
Bronx Tale? Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah. I think you should.
I just can't leave.
You should embrace it, Eric.
Yeah, I'm not going to, Fred, so thanks.
So what are you going to do with it? Just going to sit there?
No, it'll be put to good use
Maybe
somehow.
You should auction it off.
Where? To who?
For the community relations department.
Yeah, there's a way to bury it
think,
under the rug.
I don't think they take $5 donations.
Wow. Poor Mike in Cambridge.
Yeah, he did something
Poor Mike
really
in Cambridge.
Nice.
Yes.
He took a shot at me with this thing.
He bought you a present. He spent real money on that.
Yeah, but a lot of our listeners have money to spend.
What size is it?
I'll take it.
Oh, I don't know. It's probably a small, right?
No. Well, maybe it is. You're probably right.
Women's petite.
Oh, medium.
Medium. Well, that fits you.
Still two sizes too small.
Can you imagine what a medium would look like on me and Fred?
Could you get it on?
I could get it on, but it would come about halfway up my belly.
Come on, Eric. Yeah. I want to see you on a road trip, you know, in the hotel, going to breakfast with that sweater on. Chaz, what does that mean?
Yeah. And I could have to hear that every time. Yeah, no, thanks.
Yeah, I wouldn't wear it at the hotel. That's not a good idea.
No, it's never going to be worn.
Oh.
Not by me, anyway.
What a bad guy. Well, Mike, on behalf of all of us, I apologize for Eric's rude behavior.
Yes.
He got
too.
The six part right. That was my number. That's about it. Well.
All right. You got to get over this whole BU thing, you know, bringing you down.
That has nothing to do with this.
Well, the fact that he didn't go to Brown.
That has nothing to do with
this. It's really affecting your whole life.
Has nothing to do with people
taking
shots.
Now I'm on Eric's side. This has nothing to do with BU.
I was like, what did I miss?
Well, it's the
mindset. The joke is comparing him to whatever that is called. I don't even know.
I forgot about that. I think it's Chaz.
Hermaphrodite or...
He, she, it, transgender.
Transgender.
I forgot about, you know, him or her. And I just think of it as Chaz Palminteri now.
No, you don't.
Well, what about the 69?
No, you don't, because you've got that stupid grin on your face like Gronkowski.
You do. You do have the stupid Gronkowski look. He had that a number of times.
Ray today. Ray knows what I'm talking about.
Tom Curran asked him if he played fantasy football. He said, yeah, I used to. And Tom Curran goes, because you could be a pretty high draft pick, this prolific scorer in fantasy. And he just kind of smiled.
Did he ask him if he drafted himself?
No.
Joel in Merrimack says, hey guys, hi Eric. He
Screw
spells
you, bitch.
E-R-I-Q-U-E, Eric. I like that.
Like the guy from Eddie. ER back in the day, Eric LaSalle.
I think it was just Q.
It was, yeah.
Right?
Thursday was a fun game, not taking much away from it, but it was definitely fun to watch. Ridley was moving pretty well, and he seems to have nice hands as well. That catch by Taylor Price was phenomenal. Was the pass where it was intended, back shoulder, or was it just
no,
late?
No, terrible throw.
It was a bad throw.
Yeah, matter of fact, Brian himself said that after the game. That was, quote, terrible throw.
Yeah. Have a few questions about the defensive backfield corners. Did I hear rumors about Bodden possibly being a casualty of the cap?
Yeah, I don't think
so. I don't
if
think
if the
so.
Patriots have a 9.5 cap space, there's no casualties, right?
And he's one of their top two corners. You're
yeah.
Not
gonna,
you have heard rumors about that, by the way. Those I have heard those on the radio. But
not
I don't,
from
I,
anyone with yeah. any credibility.
I'm putting that in the
ones.
Same percent chance as Ocho and Haynesworth. 0.0, yeah. Blue Towers.
Nothing.
I'd put him even way further less. Whatever less than 0.0. No, seriously.
Less than 0.0.
If you were going to rate those three.
I agree with you. As whack as it sounds.
It goes Haynesworth, Ocho Cinco, Bodden, in my opinion.
I think that Bodden is clearly a starting caliber cornerback on this team.
And they don't have depth.
He's had a terrific camp.
They can afford to do that.
The only,
who are you going
to
slide up the depth chart?
I think people are finding it funny that he's sort of bouncing back and forth from the outside to inside. On Thursday, he's out there when, you know, McCourty wasn't and some of the other frontline players weren't. Like, that's an indication. Again, we always try to put Belichick in a corner and say that he did this once, so that means this is what he does. Don't. He's not a creature of patterns. He's not going to paint himself into any corners where he has to do a thing. As stupid as it sounds, I agree with Andy about the zero. It's less than a 0% chance that Bodden is going anywhere, in my opinion. The only way he's not going to be on the team is if he gets hurt.
Mm. Joel also says he heard that the Pats brought it.
You all right? You're going to make it?
Yeah.
You're going to be okay?
Tickle. I also heard that the Pats brought in Sharper for a look. Shortly after that, I heard that Shalise Manzi-Young tweeting that perhaps Belichick had finally had enough with Merriweather. What do you guys think?
Sure.
I think that's a plausible
on
explanation.
Both?
It, you know, it also coincides with Sergio Brown, as we already mentioned.
The ascension?
Starting to get some more reps. I think that they are looking for some depth at safety. You have some injuries with James Sanders. Josh Barrett
brought his helmet out to practice.
I mentioned
today.
That. Okay. He and Falk. In case you were wondering, it was kind of under his breath, but the guy that Andy demanded had diminishing skills about 8 years ago. Who cares about Falk?
Right.
That's what he said. But yeah, I mean, I think there's some injury problems there, and they're maybe looking for some solutions. I'm not sure Darren Sharper makes a lot of sense at this stage of his career. I don't know what he has left.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know how much that helps you.
Started
certainly
one game,
don't know what you can rely on him.
Last year.
How many games realistically can you rely on him playing at this stage of his career? He's played a lot of football.
Well, he played all 16 the year before when he had the great year, the 9 picks, the touchdowns, defensive player of the year type guy. So, I mean, you never know. Sometimes guys get the fountain of youth here, get a year.
Well, you figure Chung.
They learn the fountain of youth at the NFL
Chung,
level.
Chung is, you know, one of your safeties that's, you know, his role is solidified, right? Would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you
look at Eric has a prediction. Go ahead, Eric.
Which one? The captain's prediction?
Yes. I didn't know you had any others regarding Chung.
No, because we were talking about other things earlier. I think Chung has a very good shot of becoming a captain this year.
Okay. All right.
Along with, we talked about Logan Mankins being another one.
A lock.
Eric, I wholeheartedly agree with you.
I don't think Chung is going to be a captain.
I think he's been demonstrating.
A lot of questions to him about his leadership, and it seems like something that's important to him.
It does.
A lot of guys blow those questions off.
Yeah, but you got.
It seems like something that's important.
But it's
he
also,
actually mentioned this is going to make you happy, Andy. Yesterday, he said it's like a lot of the young quarterbacks, they go to Lee with their questions, and a lot of the young safeties. You know, they usually go to James, and I'm glad that I'm starting to get into that. You know, it's something that's important to me. You know, so but he mentioned Jimmy.
Just also from the way
say anything about Brandon by
conducts
the way.
Himself on the field during practice. He seems like we joked about it when he was a rookie when he used to run the sprints ahead of everybody else.
I don't like that.
No, but
I think he is a leader.
But now that he's a veteran and he does it, I think that is sort of an example setting kind of move. I don't know. I just get the feeling that he could be one of those young guys who gets
the question is how many guys on defense get named captains? Because you figure Mayo's going to be
Mayo
one.
And Vince.
Right.
I went through it with Andy. I figured Brady and Mankins on offense.
Right.
Vince, Mayo on defense, and then I added Chung as a possibility, and I threw in maybe Branch.
No, well,
a guy on special teams.
There won't be.
You don't think so this year?
There wasn't. I don't believe last year.
Possibly
was last Izzo year. Was the last special teams captain.
No.
Sam Aiken.
No, Sam Aiken was.
Oh, yeah, Aiken.
But that was a couple years ago.
Bill flat out said there wasn't anybody in that role
last year. See Gustowski then, maybe, if that's the case.
Oh,
if they want
so.
A special teams captain. I don't know if they do.
I don't think there will be.
Yeah. There might not be.
But I think they've had as many as 6 captains.
Yeah.
Did they have 7 one year?
I think they did.
Rodney.
Yeah, they did.
But I could see them doing Mankins and Chung and making it 3-3, 6.
Okay. Dan writes in, wondering how you think Jerod Mayo could best be utilized in the 4-3, if it's for real. I would venture a guess that he'd have more opportunities to make plays in the secondary and probably play from an outside position with spikes in the middle to stuff the run, assuming he can get on the field.
That's where he's played every snap except for about 5 of training camp. Weak side, outside linebacker in the 4-3.
Okay.
And yes, I expect his potentially his playmaking to increase. I think he'll have some opportunities to rush the passer. I think he'll have some opportunities to kind of blow some backs up out of the backfield. We've seen him do a nice job covering backs out of the backfield so far in camp, especially laterally. If they turn it upfield, run a wheel route, that's where you start to say, he looks like an inside linebacker chasing a running back. But as long as he keeps it within that 5-yard range, he's not bad.
Now, Andy, we talked about the 3-4-4-3 thing earlier in the show. You guys were out of practice. Now that it's past the time where they're picking personnel like in the draft, should we care so much about this? I mean, are we overblowing this whole thing?
Well, a little bit, yeah, but you also have to look at the personnel they do have in terms of maximizing their talents. I think that's what it's about now. And a guy like Andre Carter, maximizing his ability, because I think he could be a playmaker for this defense.
That's but the guy I brought
he up. Absolutely didn't want to play 3-4 last year, did it in a more professional way than Haynesworth did, struggled in it, went from 12 sacks to 2 sacks. He doesn't want to play a 3-4. So I would, you'd think he'd be in the 4-3. And, you know, and it just comes down to, are they going to be more aggressive penetrating, or are they going to just 2-gap? Because if they're just going to go traditional 2-gap, well, then,
well,
I don't think
let
you
me
want
ask this question, and I'm just asking. I'm not even playing devil's
advocate. And why bother?
I'm not even playing devil's advocate. I truly want to know. In the 3-4 defense, when you have Cunningham with his hand in the dirt, it's still a base. It's still a 3-4. If you replace him with Andre Carter, doesn't Andre Carter get more sacks in that same role
than Cunningham?
Yeah.
Yes, because he's a better pass rusher.
Yeah, I would
right.
think.
No doubt.
Right. So is it necessarily, wow, he can't get sacks if he's in a defense that plays
no, but
that?
I don't think he wants to be holding up tight ends and reading blocks. He wants to be getting
rushing
across
the
line. No, but I saw a lot of plays where last year Cunningham, his role was not to hold up a tight end. It was to get to the passer, and he just didn't get there.
Right, right.
There's plenty of opportunities in Bill Belichick's defense for an, quote-unquote, outside linebacker to get sacks.
Opportunities, but you're yeah. also asked to do those other things. And like Andy
sure.
said, he was asked to do that in Washington, and the results showed that he either isn't really good at it or just yeah. didn't really want to do it.
Bill said he wasn't good at it. Didn't suit his skill set.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you. And listen, Carter is a different story because the guy has a track record of being able to produce in one and not necessarily the other. I'm with you on Cunningham. There was nothing that precluded him from being able to get to the passer
right.
last year.
Right.
Other than his ability to get
right.
to the passer.
Right.
Well, other than the fact that I think he was very much, I think they beat into him the first role of an outside linebacker here is to set the edge.
Oh, yeah. No, that doesn't mean I'm closing the door on his career.
They didn't put Kyle Arrington there to hold up a tight end.
No,
they
no,
put
no,
him
no.
in there to get to the
but
passer.
Kyle Arrington wasn't in every down outside
no,
linebacker.
No,
he was
wasn't.
A pass rusher.
And I don't think Andre Carter is going to be either.
But Jermaine Cunningham was your best and only
right.
every down outside linebacker.
Right, because I think he can do that other part of the job, which is holding up the tight end, read
but
and react
Bill,
a little
that,
bit.
But for Bill, that's not the other part of the job. That is the primary part of that job, and then
right.
you get over to the pass
right,
rusher.
Right, but now he has a guy that he can take Cunningham out and put Andre Carter
yeah,
in
but
when
Fred,
he needs
you're
to.
Missing the fact that you're missing the fact that Carter on first down, when we're watching them out there on the field, is the guy lining up out there.
Well, then
he's not
then
a situational
a
guy.
Four,
he's
three.
Out there all the
right.
time.
Then it's probably a true 4-3. Well,
which is why I also have no desire the whole thing. Okay, they can play a 4-3, but they'll still be 2-gapping. The principles will be the same.
No.
Well
no,
because
that's
no.
the same for Andre Carter
right, but
then.
But second
right.
of all, they'll get absolutely killed.
Right.
Eric Moore will get killed.
Right.
Andre Carter will get killed. They're not going to play the run.
Now,
I there's
agree.
Two, there's
I
two,
agree with that.
Two things I want to add here. If you're doing that, to me, what Bill is saying is accurate about the overblowing of the 3-4, 4-3. Don't re- but what I and we talked about this before you guys came down, and Andy, we've talked about it a million times. What I've seen in this camp is different than any other camp I've seen.
Yes.
They're not playing the way they usually play. Whether there's four guys up front, three guys, two guys, or eight guys, they're not two gapping. They're not playing the same exact style. They're not lined up exactly. It used to be when they had a four man line, Vince was still over the center.
Right.
He's not anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and Andy's brought up Gerard Mayo is not playing over a guard anymore. He's outside over near
or
a tackle.
Or Dane Fletcher saying it's really different.
Okay, so
it's not like when you had the guards and you had to take on guards.
You know,
so.
Some of their principles and philosophies are different, even though Bill hasn't admitted that yet. He probably will never.
Actually
because,
said
again,
the opposite.
He won't want to give anybody that concrete information.
Right.
So, to me, asking Andre Carter to play in a 4-3 but 2-gap and do the way we...
It's a waste of time.
That's kind of a waste of time.
It is.
And to me, it's no different than asking him to play in a 3-4 and asking him to
right.
do that.
But the biggest issue is, in a 3-4, the outside linebacker here is the edge of the defense, is setting the run in the edge. In a 4-3, even though Kevin Carter is in basic... Andre Carter.
You always call him Kevin.
I can't help it. Is in basically the exact same position. He has the outside linebacker scraping off his butt.
Yes.
He is technically the edge of the defense. But when you're in the 3-4, that 5-technique end... can't help you. Can't get outside of you if you don't set the edge.
Right.
Here you have somebody behind you. You're still expected to play the run, but you're not the be-all, end-all, set the edge or we die that you are in the 3-4. You have two guys out there, one of which, on one side, is the best tackler on your team in Gerard Mayo. So whoever's out there, if it's Eric Moore, Andre Carter, Jermaine Cunningham, the best tackler on your team is coming off your ass. scraping to see, quote unquote, to play the run.
It's a great point. And yesterday,
that's the difference.
Yesterday at practice, I thought they were working, especially some 9-on-7s early in practice. I thought they were working on the outside run game. Well, Andre Carter could not stop the guy from getting around
him. But he doesn't have to.
But he didn't have to now.
I mean,
because
there's
other guys. Yeah. No, if he can make the play, that's great. But, you know, Dwight Freeney doesn't turn running backs back the other way very often either. And he's still a pretty effective guy in all elements of the game. Second part of that is Bill specifically said today, and here's where sometimes you got to kind of take what Bill says with a grain of salt.
Choose whether it
backs
up your argument or not.
I think, and Eric, you can help me out here with the wording, stopping the run is a strength of his.
Who's?
When talking about
yes.
Andre Carter.
Yeah, that's pretty much
playing the run or stopping the run is a strength of his.
But
yeah.
There's
I actually
different ways
that.
To play the run.
I agree.
There's
that's why I said you got to take what Bill says.
You may not make the tackle, but if you make the back who's trying to run off right tackle make a cut in the backfield, you've already won. You've taken away his momentum. His first move is 3 yards deep. Now you have either Dane Fletcher inside outing it or coming around the edge, Gerard Mayo or Gary Guyton or Rob Ninkovich. There's more of a team defense to that. But in the 3-4, if that guy gets killed on the end, if he gets hooked, hello, touchdown. You got the edge, and you're already 8 yards downfield before Gerard Mayo gets on for it.
He was highly complimentary of Andre Carter today.
Yeah, he was highly complimentary of Derek Burgess, too. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
I pick and choose those, and I just ignore all of them. I let my eyes
tell me. All right, well, no, that explanation, Andy, makes sense. Cormac writes in, I was genuinely blown away by some wonderful moments during the inaugural pregame social. From Andy's justified hype and on-the-ball predictions about Taylor Price to that crazy Jaguars reporter, wonderfully entertaining and completely mad. It was also great to hear some new listeners calling into the show. It gave it a real freshness. The live energy of the imminent kickoff to the season was pouring through the studio. Did you guys actually go with Andy's prediction of the Price is Right as the PFW headline this week? Anyway, well done.
Now we've crossed it out and put the Price is Hurt. But
well, we had the PFW jinx. He hasn't been on practice since. All we have to do is have him on the show, and they'll cut him. So that'll
That's
be
true.
It.
And Rodak
then
will be
Mike
happy.
Rodak will celebrate.
Can you imagine how much you'll get taunted if that happens?
And also, Eric and Andy, Paul and I were talking about that new replay rule for the touchdowns, any scoring play.
Yeah.
And Steve from Albany says, I'm with Paul on this one. I think they should review potential touchdown plays or automatically call them touchdowns on the field and review them later.
They will. I think the officials themselves will err on the side.
We actually asked them. I think Andy and I
just so they
kind of
get a second look at
we
it.
We kind of double-teamed the officials.
The first official was confused and had to ask a second official, which didn't make you feel good. But they say they don't think about that stuff, but I think they'll err on that side.
Yeah, I think they're going to err
it's
that
just
way.
Like, it's just like the fumbles now. They tend to call it a fumble and then look at it later.
Mm. Right.
Don't tell me that's a coincidence.
Cavern from Gainesville, I was fired up today to listen live for once, and I'll keep this short. At what point during training camp should we begin to worry about the availability of these guys who have missed a lot of this camp?
Already.
Also, did you any of you catch the Bruschi and Bill Belichick on EEI yesterday? Incredible listen. My second question is, could you envision Mr. Kraft making a splash and bringing in Bruschi as a coach when Belichick retires? I know this sounds crazy, but Bruschi seems to be a true extension of Belichick. No way.
I don't see him
giving up
his
easy.
Lifestyle. And
I mean, it's not easy just to come in as an assistant coach. Forget about a head coach. Yeah. Without any experience, no way.
Plus, it's an entire lifestyle adjustment that certain
family
guys...
or no family.
Yeah, exactly. Certain guys aren't willing to make that. I don't see him as a guy that's willing to make that sacrifice.
Word.
John in Phoenix writes in, I ended up in a discussion with a coworker who happens to be a diehard Eagles fan. We were talking about the game, and he mentioned how good Mallett looked, and in turn asked how long I personally thought Brady could play. My guess was another 5 years, as his production hasn't dropped off significantly. He thinks Brady is going to be another Favre that plays forever if he can avoid major injury, but he doesn't think there's going to be the retirement drama. Just wondering what your take would be. On another note, I'm going to guess Belichick grabs a first-rounder for Mallett or a second for Hoyer next season, and it may come from the Raiders again. Love the pregame social, even though I despise Facebook.
Me too. We feel the same.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just deny that only because I keep saying every time I think that it won't happen, the stupidity of general managers across the league never ceases to amaze me.
And the Raiders is a good one for Mallett because
of... Big arm, tall, make all the throws. You know, if only he ran a 4.44, he might as well be a lock, stock, and barrel. But I just don't know how you're going to get that high a draft pick for either one of those guys if they never play. And I don't care about the preseason. It has to be regular season.
Yeah, and what if they actually like Mallett? Want to keep him around?
Yeah,
as insurance, well, just in case.
But this guy is surmising that Brady's going to be like Favre and play until he's 40.
Well, right. He may want to play until he's 40, but he might not play until he's 40 here.
Ooh.
So, I mean, no, it's true.
It's true.
Bill has definitely got rid of the last franchise quarterback that was around.
But it's Joe Namath.
It's definitely true.
Be.
But this guy's point is Brady is going to stay here, and under that scenario, what does he do with the quarterbacks? That's all.
Well, we've seen that. You know,
I mean, there's people that think Brian Hoyer's going to get traded now.
Quarterbacks can be good currency. There's no doubt about it. There's nothing wrong with developing a quarterback.
That was the big weekend topic du jour on talk radio. What did Brian Hoyer earn you in the trade market based on what he did Thursday night? I would say nothing.
Nothing.
Because anybody that would trade a significant chip based on a half of play of a preseason game is insane.
Right.
Now, again, I'm never going to underestimate the stupidity of general managers.
Well,
I've seen some.
They got a second bad for deals. Castle because he won 11 games.
And played a whole season.
Right. In fairness to Hoyer, the last time I saw a backup quarterback get this much attention and then go to another team and have success was Matt Hasselbeck when he was backing up Favre in Green Bay. He had a couple of great preseason games.
And what did he get?
What do you mean, what did he get?
And in the trade market.
Oh, I don't know what he got. I don't remember what
he got. I believe
it
was a sixth-round pick.
But the player had success. Whether or not what they gave up for him to me is irrelevant. The fact that he could play.
Oh, but it's relevant to me. These people want a first and second round pick.
Well, I would say the most recent example is Schaub,
who had his game against
the Patriots.
And he played.
But only a little.
But he did something in the, like Rob Johnson only did it in one game.
Yeah, that was the regular season.
Right.
It was a real game. Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you have to at least get a taste in a real game to get anything of substance.
He will.
And I don't remember exactly what Brunel got. I mean, Green Bay wrote the book.
What did Kevin Cobb get?
They had Brunel, Ty Detmer, and Matt Hasselbeck.
DRC.
Yeah.
Right.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I think that was a ridiculously high package for a guy who has it, but at least he has, I think, 17 games under his belt
but
or something like
the
that.
The other thing about Cobb, though, is who had Andy Reid saying he's our starter at one time. Even though
he was their starter.
Right. So that at least you had the endorsement of his former coach that he was going to be the starter.
What about the fact that he replaced him?
Well, in half.
You ignore that endorsement.
But with Michael Vick, you know, so, you know.
Yeah, but
yeah.
I think that devalues the endorsement a
you
little
know,
bit.
You know, but yeah.
I like when I'm not involved in those yes, but yeah.
Mike in sunny Florida has a couple questions. He says, why would the NFL care if players take HGH?
Well, I mean, why should they care? You either care about PEDs or you don't.
Right, right. So it's
that's all.
You do what you
and I don't. If you don't, I don't care.
And it's also illegal.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't just take them. I know they're legal for certain uses and prescriptions, but
just like steroids,
21-year-old guy taking HGH because he bought it at an Orlando clinic is not allowed.
I mean, steroids, same thing. I mean, there's medical reasons that people use steroids,
but it's also part of either you're trying to
and
keep
they're in limited
PEDs
doses
out of
and
your
they're
NFL locker room or you're not.
Yeah.
I'm all for it being legal. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, if that's not the argument. If you think that it should
that's
be legal,
bigger, that's just for personal reasons.
No.
But you either care about PEDs or you don't. You can't just say, well, this one's okay, that one's not.
Dip it, Chaz.
The other question he has
you need steroids for your little surgery you had.
How much can a show like Dennis and Callahan pay Brady to talk each week? I don't see that it's enough for a man of his wealth to care. Is it more a part of a contract for publicity?
Well, I missed that. Sorry. Andy and I were having a little battle.
He's wondering why Brady has to talk on Patriots Monday every Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Contractually obligated.
Yeah.
Not because he likes it.
I think the team actually.
Was that part of the agreement?
It's part of
it
Patriots Monday.
It might be part of more of a team agreement rather than with
to
EEI.
To make it worth their
I'm
while
sure
to
trickle down economics.
No, it was all in one. It was the team that negotiated with EEI to have Patriots Monday. EEI said, as part of that, we want Brady and Belichick, plus other players
but then the
who
team,
have sort of changed. They've been interchangeable.
Brady's getting something out of the deal.
Oh, he gets
in
paid.
In order to do it.
I don't know. Does he get paid?
I believe he does.
I don't think he would do it for the, you know,
I'm not saying anything. I don't know.
The email's point is, how much money would it be worth it for Brady to do that?
Oh, no. He doesn't have a choice.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
He doesn't have a choice. But I do think he gets paid for it.
Okay, but that's,
I don't know how much.
But if it was just money, he wouldn't do it. That's the point of the emailer.
Well, it depends on
how much the money is.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Yeah. But
all right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW
in
Progress.
I just got here.
Sorry, Andy. Now, remember, Thursday we've got a preseason game. So, once again, we won't have a noontime PFW in Progress, but the pregame social starts at 5:15.
Correct. Who will I correctly predict even to have a breakout game this week?
Even though we're playing the Buccaneers, we're going to have Vito Stellino on again. I'm only kidding. These guys will talk to you on Thursday. They know me though, cause I'll be putting in work. Commit my life to rebirth. Well respected, cause that's my word. And I'll show you her. Heard about a new sound gone round. She might have left my hood, but she was born in my town.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.